Good morning. We're calling to order the Wednesday, September 24th, 2014 variance hearing. I'm Scott Sanchez, the zoning administrator, here with Eva Tejera Taylor and Matthew Dito, who's at the controls for the hearing today. I'd like to begin with a few general information items. First, the order of presentation. The applicant and or owners shall be allowed 5 minutes to present oral arguments on how the five findings necessary to grant a variance have been met. The applicant should also submit their declaration of posting at this time when they present to approach to present their case. Any members of the public, either proponents or opponents, will be allowed 3 minutes to speak each. If there is any public testimony in opposition, the project sponsor will be allowed a 3-minute rebuttal. During the hearing, I may ask questions of the applicant and or members of the public. At the end of the item, I may either close the public hearing and take the matter under advisement, may continue to a future date, or may take action on the item today. Items on the consent calendar are matters that are considered routine by the zoning administrator, and if anyone would like to speak on one of these items, please step forward at the time that it's called. Otherwise, these items will be granted. There is currently one item that is listed on the consent calendar, but we will inclined to add two other items, given that we do have limited time here and want to ensure that we can get to all the other cases. I'll call those in just a few minutes. There's a general public comment at the end of the hearing for items that are not on the agenda today, and members of the public would be allowed 3 minutes each to speak at that time. Now, a criteria for justifying a variance. Per Planning Code Section 305C, it states that in order to grant a variance, the zoning administrator must determine that the facts of the case are sufficient to establish the following five findings. Finding number one, that there are exceptional and extraordinary circumstances applying to the property involved or to the intended use of the property that do not apply generally to other property or uses in the same class district. Finding number two, that owing to such exceptional and extraordinary circumstances, the literal enforcement of specified provisions of the planning code would result in practical difficulty or a necessary hardship not created by or attributable to the applicant or the owner of the property. Finding number three, that such variance is necessary for the preservation and enjoyment of a substantial property right of the subject property possessed by other property in the same class of district. Finding number four, that the granting of such variance will not be materially detrimental to the public welfare or materially injurious to the property or improvements in the vicinity. And finally, finding number five, that the granting of such variance will be in harmony with the general purpose and intent of the planning code and will not adversely affect the general plan. No decision is final till the decision letter is issued. Due to current backlogs, decision letters may take up to 2 months to complete from the date of this hearing. If anyone would like a copy of that letter, please sign in on the sign-in sheets on the far wall, and that's very important because it is the decision letter which has the appeal rights, and that can be appealed within 10 days of issuance to the Board of Appeals. Other items. Private conversations can be disruptive during the hearing. While we do encourage parties to meet and to discuss the projects, we would request that that be done outside of the hearing room so as to avoid distracting others. The next variance hearing is scheduled for October 22, 2014. Assistant Zoning Administrator Corey Teague will be acting zoning administrator for that hearing. Audio recordings of the variance hearings beginning with the January 1st, 2011 hearing are available on our website as a link on the agenda. Thank you for that, and we will now move to the consent calendar items. I'll do that after the consent. So we'll begin with consent items. There's one item currently on the consent of 265 Castro Street, and I'm inclined to add also item number 7, 315 Bay Street, and the final item number 16 for 4366 17th Street. So hey, Matthew, if you want to read those three items, and we'll see if there's any public comment.
Okay, first we have 265 Castro Street, case 2014.0532V for a rear yard variance. And number six, we have
number
case
seven.
We have 2013.0507V at 315 Bay Street for a rear yard variance. And last, we have number 16, case 2013.1120V at 4366 17th Street for a rear yard variance.
Is there any public comment on any of these three items? If not, these three items would be granted. So again, any public comment on these three items? Seeing no public comment, close the public hearing on those items, be inclined to grant the requested variances. And we do have two other housekeeping items of continuances for items number 2, which is 22 Ord Court, and item number 3, which is 24 Ord Court. It's my understanding from staff that discretionary review requests have been filed on these projects. As such, we will continue them to a joint hearing on December 4th with the Planning Commission, and that would be a joint public hearing on Thursday, December 4th, for the two items at 22 Ord Court and 24 Ord Court. Is there any public comment on the continuance of these two items to that hearing date? Seeing no public comment, we continue items number 2 and 3 to December 4th to a joint hearing with the Planning Commission for consideration of discretionary review, and we can move on to item number 4.
Okay, item number 4, case 2014.0772 at 3828 Jackson Street for a rear yard variance. Project sponsor, please approach the mic. You have 5 minutes.
Good morning, Mr. Sanchez. My name is Lewis Butler. I'm the architect for 3828 Jackson Street. We're seeking a rear yard variance for a 50-square-foot bay window. This house was built in 1929. It is one of a pair of houses at Jackson and Cherry Street that are quite similar in design. Jacobethan, I believe, is the style that people apply to these two houses. Both houses are set very far back in the lots, forming a notable pair of houses at the dead end of Cherry Street on the left. This house does appear on the 1976 architectural survey. Because these houses are set back and because the facades are both remarkable in how they work individually and as a pair, we've decided to do a small addition at the back to remedy a problem of a very dark living room at 3828 itself. That living room is very dark because the long wall of the living room is against the long wall of the neighbor, and we do not want to alter the facade. Therefore, we've chosen to apply for a variance for a bay window on the north side in an area where the house is forms kind of a pocket against the presidio, again, with the house to the east being about 10 feet further out, so that our bay sits in a pocket and really does not increase the or decrease the average setback between this pair of houses and the wall. I refer to these houses as a pair because I think they operate as a pair, even though our application is at 3828. So the reason for the bay window is to increase the amount of light in the living room. Both of these houses have unremarkable northern facades. Adding this bay window allows us to copy some of the detail at the front of the house and apply that to the rear. This is a very common dog walking and jogging area in the Presidio, so at the pedestrian level, this bay window will add to the pedestrian interest as people go by. I'm certainly available to answer any questions, and please let me know if I've left out anything in my narrative that augments the findings that we've made in our application.
No, thank you. I mean, I think contributing further to the issue with the light in that room is that it is north-facing. So that would also kind of further darken that room.
Thanks for mentioning that. Both north facing, and then you have the forested nature of the Presidio. That's exactly right.
Okay, thank you. We'll see if there's any public comment on this item. Is there any public comment on item number 4 for 3828 Jackson Street? And 3828 Jackson Street. Seeing no public comment, we close the public hearing. Be inclined to grant the requested variance. The building, this has been noted, as at least a likely resource, if not a resource, and this is a minor addition to the rear of an existing legal non-complying structure to improve the light and air to the building. We can move on to the next item.
Okay, item number 5, case 2007.0213V at 325 Bowdoin Street. For a lot area side setback, rear yard, and parking variances.
Yeah, good morning, Mr. Zoning Administrator. Excuse me just a minute. Okay. This is actually quite a straightforward question. I mean, case. We've been working on this case since 2003, and we've gone through almost everything, including staff analysis and everything. This is the area we're talking about. It's basically an open space, and it's been existing since, I don't know, for a very long time. Now, there's a building on it which is recessed all the way over there, which is a single-family dwelling, a single-story. And this large space here, which is a corner lot, is left vacant. Now, basically, the problem we have is this is an RH1D lot. It is exclusively in RH1 district. Across the street is exclusively HR1D. And if you, which I was trying to just show you, if you look at the Sanborn map, you will find out that even though these properties are H1D, they are all substandard lots, and I do not know when they were converted. If you look at the history of this place, you'll find out that the lots, most of these lots have been subdivided in the last 20 years. So what we are trying to do, most of the lots across the street in HR1 district are between 20 and 2400 square feet. This lot is 5,200 square feet, and even with the subdivision, it's going to be larger than most of the lots in this area. So what we are asking for, since this whole area is vacant, is that the owners should have a parity of treatment in the sense that they be able to construct a single-family dwelling which has gone through planning review and gone through a residential review guidelines and has been approved. So basically, that is the case. We have a huge lot, and basically, we want to just subdivide it and build a single-family dwelling there. The lot is going to be about 2,600 square feet, while all the lots in this area are almost 2,300 square feet. So basically, that is our case. Thank you very much.
Thank you. So you mentioned that the project has been ongoing since 2003. I'm assuming that the building permit has been submitted for this project as well?
Yes, sir.
And do you know what the status of the Section 311 notification is for the project?
Oh, it was sent out, I think, last month.
Last month.
Yes, because they were waiting for the environmental review. We had to go through the tree retention hearing with DPW, which was approved. And basically, we had to also go through the environmental review, the HRE, which has been approved. So we're just waiting for the variance.
And so the Section 311 has expired?
It has expired, yes.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you, sir.
Is there any public comment on this item? And we're on item number 5 for 325 Bordeaux Street.
Yes, there is. What my noted opponent just said is basically misleading.
Please speak into the microphone, and you have 3 minutes.
That's basically misleading. It's been going on since 2003 because the district's been fighting the separation of lots because these homes, well, they basically provide a warehouse status for people. 6 bedrooms for a single-family unit? I don't think so. We've had a couple of those built. They've actually destroyed our neighborhood. But on the other hand, we'd like this hearing, first of all, to be rescheduled on these grounds. Number one, it was not posted properly on the street. It was posted 30 feet to 40 feet away where it was unreadable. And was only changed after we complained to the city that we couldn't read the thing 2 days ago. Therefore, most of the community is unaware of it. It was posted in only English. A good majority of our district is Chinese, and unfortunately, they can't read English. Third reason is there's no Cortland Street in our district. So how could the house on Cortland Street, according to this, be untouched? So there's misleading information on it. The city mailer that was sent out to us was sent out and received on Thursday of last week. which did not provide the amount of time needed to respond to this by the city, the people in the district. These people came to me because I used to be a civic leader, and I still am, of the Portola Association, Silver Avenue Association. The problem is that the plan submitted jeopardized the lines of the district. As for the lots being all smaller, my lot is as big as this lot. Every other house on that block built in 1938 had a large lot. Every other house had a smaller lot. Why? I have no idea, but that's the way they were built. The house next door to this has a lot as big as that lot is. So he misled you when he said the lots were smaller. They're not. Only every other house lot is smaller. The problem is you did not give the district enough notice. They did not give the district enough notice by hiding the sign, one behind the trees and the other one on the garage. Now, to go a step further, they're talking about the existing building being left intact. Well, they're tearing the garage down to make space for the new building. Therefore, the existing building does not have a garage or a space to park a vehicle. If they claim that the new building will provide that, that's false too, because if you take a look at the design, one car would have to be brought in at an angle, and it has to be a mini small car. The second car would be brought in straight because the garage width is not wide enough. This is getting out of hand in our district. It's causing a lot of problems within the district. We have a zero parking now. Why? Because of these kind of buildings. You're allowing them to build single-family units with 5-6 bedrooms, then renting out each bedroom as an apartment.
So, thank you. That's your time. So we did receive photos of the poster from the project sponsor showing that it was posted on the fence at the corner. Do you have any evidence?
That was posted yesterday.
Do you have any evidence that it was not posted?
I have a witness.
And, I mean, have any photographic evidence showing that it wasn't in that location?
Does it say anywhere in your flyer that I need photographic evidence to prove a point?
I'm asking you, to
justify the point?
All I'm asking you is if you have any evidence. And if the answer is no.
My witness is an ex-San Francisco police officer and community leader.
Is he here today?
Who?
The person, your eyewitness.
Yes, right.
Okay.
Here.
Thank you. So more public comment? Any other public comment, sir? If you'd like to step forward.
Well, the only thing I can say is they removed that sign about from 2 to 3 days.
Okay.
It was hiding behind. That's all I can say.
So it was posted only. It was posted on the fence only 2-3 days ago.
Yes.
Okay. Thank you. Any other public comment on this item? And we're on item number 5 for 325 Bedoin.
Hi, my name is Lily. I am the owner of the property. We have posted a sign up there, but it fell down, so I don't know. So we had to repost it. So anyway, to make saying that the poster was not in Chinese, it's kind of, because I speak Chinese, so I've been talking to neighbors in the area that speaks Chinese, and they were aware of the hearing and the project that we're going to be doing. So everywhere you go, there's no Chinese posters posted of it for hearing, and I just don't think his comment was sufficient. Like, it shouldn't be looked into because of that, because if it's required by the department that it should be in Chinese, you could have been issued in Chinese and English so we could post it onto the property. So it doesn't make it relevant. And I just feel that our project has been dragged on long enough, and we went through every single channel and we passed every single channel to get to this point where we want the variance to be passed too. Yeah, we are building a brand new property. I have a large family, and we need the space to live in. I mean, we don't buy the property for nothing and all that. We it's for our family, our future. I have kids and my parents. We all live together, so we need the house the size it is now that we're proposing. Thank you.
Thank you.
I'd like to rebut that.
You don't get a rebuttal, sir. You step forward. You have a final comment?
Yes, please. First of all, the gentleman that just said something here lives on Silver Street, which is a block away from this property. Secondly, this here, I don't know if you can see it. This here is the lot. Now look at the size of this lot and tell me all the lots across the street, which are H1D, and on this lot line, I mean block face, which one is actually larger than this lot? So basically, what he's saying cannot be true.
So to clarify too, I believe that actually to the north, it's still RH1 lots. I think that the RH1D lots are to the west.
Yeah, the HR1D lots are across the street from here. And this is HR1.
Thank you, sir. Not according to our zoning maps. They have it RH1 across Hale and RH1D across Bowdoin.
Yeah, this is the only property that is HR1D, and we don't know why, and it's the largest.
And in regards to the posting question, the email that we have that has the posters, photos of the posters, is dated from Monday. Do you have any evidence before that? And typically project sponsors will take photos of the poster once they post it, and that can be time, date, stamped. So do you have any evidence?
We have the documents here, which we intend to provide you. And basically, obviously, I don't do it directly. The owner, as you heard, did it. And she assured me that she put up the posters.
And where did she put up the posters?
Excuse me?
And where did she say that she put up the posters?
Yes, she said she put up the posters. She has the pictures, which I can show you if you want.
Right, but she said she put up the posters when and where?
She said she put up the posters right on the gate for Hale Street. This is a corner lot, so she had to put up two. And she put up the other one on the shed, which can be seen from Bodine Street very clearly. I think it's about 6 feet, which is the...
On the shed. What's the shed exactly? Is that the parking garage?
It's not a parking. If you look at the sandbar map, it's never been a parking. It's a shed. It's in fact entitled accessory on the record.
And so it's basically where the arrow is pointed.
Yes, yes.
And so the poster was on that building?
The poster was on that building.
This was not properly noticed. I'm sorry. The photos that I have show the poster on the fence at the corner of the property. We have testimony from two neighbors saying that, in fact, at least one of the posters was on the building. You just corroborated that. That would not satisfy the minimum posting requirements for this item. So we will not be completing this hearing today. We will continue it, and I think our calendars are pretty well full, so I'm actually just going to take this item off. We will renotice it entirely, ensure that a proper notice is done for a future hearing date to be determined.
Okay.
Thank you.
All right. I think it's a little bit unfair to the owner because I didn't post it, and I don't want you to take my word for it. They said they posted it, and I don't know really if they posted it because what she said here just now.
I think we have enough information that leads me to question whether or not this was properly noticed. As zoning administrator, I'm responsible for ensuring that these hearings are properly noticed, and I'm not confident of that fact. So with that, I think we need to renotice this item, and we will again determine the hearing date. We're booked pretty well, unfortunately, for the rest of the year. We only have two hearings in October and one in December, and both of those, I think, are currently full. If space is available, we will try to accommodate that. I mean, if the project sponsor's been waiting to 2003, then, you know, probably a few more months won't hurt. And we'll get also confirmation of the status of the Section 311 notification. Because if in fact that has not expired, then there could very well be a discretionary review, and we may have a joint hearing anyway. So thank you for your time. Apologies that, you know.
Is it just the poster, or you have to do the 311 again? Nobody's complaining about the 311. Everybody received it.
We'll investigate that. I mean, that may very well be fine, and we're not going to duplicate notice that doesn't need to be duplicated.
But okay.
I do have concerns about at least the posting for this property. The mailed notice does go out 10 days in advance, so that's why the neighbors would have received that last week, but the posting is supposed to be up 20 days in a conspicuous location on the property there and not set back as far as it seems to have been. So with that, you know, I think we can just take this item off calendar. We'll renotice and have a future hearing date on the variance. We'll investigate the Section 311 and, if necessary, redo that.
Okay. Thank you, sir.
Thank you. And so we can move on to the next item, please.
All right, moving on to item number 6, case 2012.1527V at 349 Richland Avenue, seeking exposure, rear yard, and front setback variances. Will the project sponsor please approach the microphone? Thank you. You have 5 minutes.
Hi. Thank you, Mr. Sanchez, Mr. Secretary, Madam Secretary. We really appreciate you seeing this case before us today. My name is Karen Curtis. I'm the architect representing the owners, Brian and Mary Joe McHugh with Red Dot Studio. We have a number of documents that we want to put up. I want to show where the project location is. The project is in a lovely Bernal Heights location. There is an existing rear yard cottage on the property and a second building on the property that was a garage at the front of the property. I want to take a note to let you know that I first learned about Brian and Mary Jo's situation when our kids went to public school together, and I realized what they were going through with their home, and they were instrumental in that public school and that PTA, and that is why we got involved in this project to try and sort some of this out. So there's a number of variances that are being requested. Some are to fix work that they have done without a permit, but some are also to fix work that was actually done with a permit. And so I'd like to take you through all of those, and we'll start with the rear cottage. So this is the Sanborn map that shows the existing rear yard cottage. You also can see other rear yard cottages throughout Bernal. So it's a project, it's an area that does have rear yard cottages, except for the code section 134 on historic rear yard cottages that talks about the 25-foot setback. That code interpretation doesn't apply to the Bernal Heights special use district. So we have the cottage also has a Sanborn, this is the most recent Sanborn map that shows sort of a dotted line showing different roof lines, and we have some historic photos of what that cottage looked like. So that is what the cottage appeared to be before the owners put on a third-story addition. Our proposal is for a rear yard variance to actually remove that addition. So the rear yard variance is to remove 894 square feet of area that was done without benefit of permits. There's some further, in talking to some of the adjacent neighbors, there's some further information on what it looked like from the rear before that addition was put on. So that's an image showing the back of it, a shed roof. That's actually some workers on the roof. And we have applied for, we have submitted an environmental app, and this cottage was given a CEQA, so it's gone from a B historic resource to a C. And so the current project in front of you, current proposal in front of you, is to remove 894 square feet of the existing, the built third story addition and restore it to its former historic shape. This next map, and as I showed you on the Sanborn map, there are a number of historic rear yard cottages throughout Bernal. And this next map is interesting. You may hear some comments on this from neighbors, is that we did a little research because since there's two buildings on this property, we were trying to split that into a change of use to a two-unit building. And so we did some research both through Google Earth and walking the neighborhood, looking for places where there are two buildings on a single lot in Bernal and where there had been perhaps been a precedent for a change of use to a legal two-unit dwelling. And we have to admit we didn't find that precedent. We found many that had received, say, an NOV for having multiple units but not having done the legal change of use to multiple units. So we have an exposure variance that is based on us trying to do a legal change of use to make this a two-unit building, providing much-needed housing stock. We're going to move on to the front building. Zoom in on the front building, and this is where we're trying to correct work that was actually done with a permit. So the previous variance for the rear yard variance was removing work that was done without benefit of permits and restoring it to its previous shape. But now we have a situation where a garage was permitted. And let's take a note that this building was built back in the early 2000s. It was a very different climate. They were working with a very different group of people that were telling them to do permits a certain way. And We've been weeding through this, and I want to actually thank both the planning department and your staff, because we've actually spent a lot of time trying to kind of recreate and weed through this, and they've given us a lot of information and guidance on the past permits. So they've been very helpful providing some of that. We have submitted a permit history. As I said, I wasn't involved in the projects when these were done, and so some of what we're here before in a variance is in order to correct things that were submitted for permit, approved for permit, and in some cases finaled, and in other cases not. And I can talk more about permit history. So the first part is the garage on the lower floor. There was a permit submitted for it, but it was not set at the average of the two adjacent neighbors. That permit was approved. It was built, but it was never finaled. We renewed it for final, but the building inspector said, look, when you do the rest of the work, this will just get ripped out. Why don't you wait? So we have a front yard variance for that location on the property. The second story was permitted. It finaled in that location. So the second story floating on top of the first finaled. And so we have the lot coverage of that second story that with that finaled permit. It was done in a number of permits, but they were finaled. That was finaled in that location. The bay is 15 feet wide and squared. It was built squared and finaled squared. However, the approved plan showed the more normal 45-degree angle. So that has two variances for the front yard in order to correct permitted work. And then you can see that there is a third story addition that's entirely within the buildable area on the lot. And instead of the garage continuing to function as garage and storage, we're hoping to be able to make it much needed housing. The third story addition was done without benefits of permit, but that's what we're here. That's the entire extent of the addition that we're here to put on. It's 546 square feet. The rest of the lot coverage was previously approved. So we're looking to make two legal units, the front unit being 1,318 square feet, and the rear unit being 1,561. We're providing parking through two Class 1 bicycle parking spaces and two tandem car parking spaces. Happy to take comments on the layout of that, but we're looking to provide the 2x6 in an enclosed area, not the 2-foot by 6-foot in a locker. So those are them, and there's a lot of specifics on this project that I know we've traded information or I've sent memos of what we've uncovered. I'm happy to take questions.
Thank you. Well, it is very complicated, so appreciate the thorough walkthrough of this. So we have, if I understand correctly, the rear building, which had, without benefit of permit, another story added, and this
Correct.
Will remove that and restore it back to its previous condition, so it will not be any larger than it existed previously?
It will not be any larger than it existed previously, and the building built in the 1900s had number, if you look at the historic Sanborn maps, so over the years, and that were submitted during the EA app, you can see that building changed shape over the years, but the last known shape that we have through these photos and through, sorry, I've moved them. The last known shape is what we're going back to.
Okay.
The window configuration will be different, but we submit it what the new elevations would look through as part of the historic.
And then
but the outside shape would be the same.
The garage at the front that was permitted, the plans were inaccurate and inaccurately depicted the adjacent properties?
No, the plans didn't inaccurately. The plans depicted the adjacent properties exactly where they are, but the building was located at the face of the upslope neighbor, not the average of the two adjacent neighbors. So it was drawn accurately, but placed, I don't know.
So it wasn't built in the location stated on the plan?
No, it was built exactly in the location.
So it was essentially approved in error.
It was approved in error.
Okay.
Yeah.
And then the story that was added above that was properly permitted and final, but the work exceeded the scope of the permit, and that the bay window was rather than chamfered, it was
Correct.
Squared.
Correct.
And then the third story on top of that was built without permit at all.
Right. And that's the area that we are at least in the buildable part of the lot.
Thank you. And so you guys have owned the property for how long now?
15 years now.
So maybe you could speak in the microphone. Just have a couple of questions. The other one is active.
We've been there for 15 years.
Okay. And then when did 16. All the work start?
As soon as we got there, we started working on the house. The addition started once we started having our family and growing our family.
So the addition at the back started first without permit. And when did you receive your first notice of violation from the city about any of the work on the site?
3 years ago, I believe. Was it 20?
Okay. I'm just still wondering in terms of...
I think it was 2011.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. So basically after everything had been done is when you first were found to be in violation.
Yeah.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And when you did the garage permit, there were inspections of the property, and there was an inspection. So they did a final inspection for the story. It was storage above the garage, and the garage itself had not received a final inspection.
Correct.
Okay. Thank you. See if there's any public comment on this item. And I guess the Section 311 notice expired, I think, on Sunday. So the last day to file a DR was on Monday. It's my understanding from staff that no discretionary reviews were filed. Is that
correct? That's my current understanding as well.
Okay, thank you. Mm-hmm. So, is there any public comment on this item, on item number 6 for 349 Richland Avenue?
Hi, good morning.
Thank you. You have 3 minutes.
My name is Josephine Heron. I live across the street at 350.
If you could just speak a bit more into the microphone.
Like this?
Yes, thank you.
I'll repeat. My name is Josephine Heron. I live at 350 across the street. I'm here to request that you deny the variance for the legalization of the third-story unit on the front building. The reason I'm asking for that is primarily due to they're asking to create a two-family buildings, one building per family, and yet they are asking for a garage that only holds two cars. At two bicycles. The houses at 347 and 357 each had an additional story built on those units, and they had to increase their parking appropriately. One of them had to actually dig out and create new parking spaces. I do not see where this unit deserves to have a two-family unit and only two-car parking. When the current architect dealt with us, she said that they would increase the garage to four cars. That was later changed to a comment of, well, no, we're going to leave it at two cars because whoever moves in there can take the BART or Caltrans. They won't need a car. I don't think she has the ability to forecast what people are going to do. The comment was they can take a Google bus. I'm not satisfied with that answer, nor do I think a space for two bicycles replicates the space for two additional cars. It just cannot. The other thing that I would like to discuss is if indeed this variance is allowed and they are allowed to substitute cars for bicycles, is this going to be a precedent for all of San Francisco? The second thing is this is such a large project. Much of this work was done unpermitted with the full knowledge of the owners. We are skeptical, frankly, that they will indeed perform all of the items on the building permit, specifically the removal of the unpermitted third story in the back, and also whatever additions need to be made in the front to make that legal. If that includes tearing down that third story, well, that includes it. I have more, but I'm out of time.
Thank you. So the questions would be concerned largely related to the density and the parking. So if these were not defined as two separate dwelling units, but this was one large dwelling with an accessory residential at the back, then would you not have concerns about the project?
We would have concerns regardless, because it's over 3,000 square feet.
So it's not the number of units, it's the size of the building and the number per burnell.
Well, that's both. I mean, okay. Frankly, it says on the thing there, they're asking to increase from one family to two families.
Okay. Thank you. Next member of the public for public comment on 349 Richland.
I'm not sure how I operate this so that I can get the whole page on.
There should be a little knob at the top there to zoom in and out.
I want to come back so I can see the whole page.
There you go.
Okay, well, that's good enough. That's not the entire page. Good morning. My name is Jeffrey Brown.
So if you could speak into the microphone
to your right.
Over there. The other microphone, right. Sir.
Oh, I kind of feel like I'm hiding behind this big podium here, but I guess I'll do.
I can see you just fine.
So my name is Jeffrey Brown. I live at 351 Richland Avenue. That's the adjacent property. I own that property. I live upstairs with my family, and we rent the lower unit. I'm here to ask you to send this project back to the drawing board as designed. It's too large. We've been living with the illegal construction of the third story for 4.5 years now. The notice of violation was not as recent as said earlier. And it's had a very direct impact on our home and our rental unit. The sunlight to the bathrooms and kitchen has been reduced significantly. But perhaps more importantly is the precedent or the, yeah, let's just use that word, that this project sets for our neighborhood. This is a very big project. Our district has special use zoning. I think you're familiar with that. I don't mean to tell a planner about the planning. And yes, we're dealing with a case where we have a cottage on the rear yard, and so there's some of that is not covered by the zoning. I've been to two community meetings, and then also one meeting with the architect individually, and then we recently had a facilitated meeting. And I have some concerns that I just do not feel are being answered honestly. I mean, I listened to it just now when I was told how they met in public school, and yet this property is appraised at or assessed at 900 square feet. All these years with the open permits, they've been paying taxes on 900 square feet. By their own admission, it's way more than that. So I've been dealing with those kind of misstatements at the last community meeting. The architect said she can get 4 cars in a garage, but only 2 independently. She cannot get 4 cars in that garage any which way. She said if the property were to remain RH1, no variances would be required. Again, that is not the simple truth. And these were statements made at the community meeting. So the public that isn't here, perhaps they're not here because, and I don't mean the public, I mean the neighbors who attended that meeting were given misleading information. Let's take a look at the variance exhibit number 4, in which the architect tries to describe additional properties in the neighborhood that have 2 buildings on them. Well, I did a little chart here, a table, and I mean, let's just start with the obvious one right across the street, 352 Richland. That's a single building, and it's a single-family home. So if you go through these 20 properties, you'll discover, in fact, that quite a few of them are single-family homes, and this is according to the public records that are available online. A number of them, 3 of them, have larger lot sizes than this property. 8 of them are single-family homes, so that leaves us with approximately 9 or 10 properties that are comparable. Of those properties, of the 2- and 3-unit building properties, some of these have as many as 5 units and are really providing housing stock to our neighborhood. The average square footage of those units is 940 square feet. The 2-unit buildings have an average of just over 1,000 square feet. The project at hand is looking for over 1,400 square feet per unit. So this claim of much-needed housing, and I was told it would be affordable housing at the meeting with the planner, this facilitated meeting. I mean, these are words that are being thrown around quite liberally. So to get back to the variance situation, you know, we're looking at a number of variances here. May I go on?
Can you just wrap up that thought?
Sure. There's a lot of history to this project, and I've done my homework on it. We're looking at three variances on today's agenda, and the fourth variance of off-street parking was removed since the last community meeting. I think if the workaround on how that variance was removed is shared with the neighborhood, there may be a reaction that is worth considering. I mean, I have the copies of the code that seem pertinent to that. And I think we're really just looking at an unprecedented accommodation for the parking. You know, as far as the front yard setback, inaccuracies in the drawing, I mean, who's responsible for that? A statement that things were different back in the 2000s? The Bernal zoning went into effect in 1991, I believe it was. So this was all in place at the time. The rear yard requirement, yes, we have a cottage that's sitting in the rear yard. It makes interpretation of the rear yard somewhat more flexible. But I think essentially we're looking at a lot of lot coverage on this project. And so I ask you to send this project back to the drawing board. We can reduce that third story at the front of the building is so, what I'm looking for.
Thank you. So thank you for clarifying that. So the changes to the rear to revert it back to its previous condition.
Well, there's a little vagary there as well. You know, we're talking about reverting it back to its previous condition. None of the Sanborn maps show the footprint of the building as it exists now. So we're talking about putting the roof line back to its original condition, but actually that's probably not entirely accurate because the footprint was different, so I imagine the roof line was a little different too. But I'm not, other than, you know, being very honest and specific about what we're doing there, I don't have problems with it.
So the main concern is with the third story at the front.
That's right. And
if it were still two units but the third story was removed?
I do not have a problem with that solution at all. I mean, when I moved into the building, the unfinished unfinished second story was in existence. You know, I accepted that as a pre-existing condition.
When you moved in, wait, when did you move in?
I moved in 2009, I believe it was.
And at that time, the third story had yet to be constructed.
That's right. Okay. There was no construction at all there. And so, as I say, we're not talking about theoretical building. I've been looking at bare plywood for 4.5 years now.
Okay.
So, but one other small point, the bay window in the front setback that is that apparently was signed off, it wasn't built as shown in the drawings.
Right.
And although it doesn't have the chamfered corners and it's been squared off, it's actually been elongated as well. So the overall length is not as shown on the drawing.
Okay, thank you for your points.
Okay. Thank you for listening.
Is there any other public comment on this item? And we're on item number 6 for 349 Richland Avenue.
Good morning, Mr. Sanchez. I'm Dr. Jeffrey Schwartz. I'm the co-owner with Dr. Cynthia Berry of the two-flat building directly next door to the McHugh property. One of the complaints is that the two units of 1,400 square feet each will be luxury units incompatible with the neighborhood. Please let me put that to rest. Our building next door has two flats, and they average just over 1,800 square feet each, 30% larger than what's being proposed. They are not a problem for the neighborhood and weren't at the review hearings we held when the building was first planned and built. Mary Jo and Brian are great people, great neighbors, and great parents. I have never known anyone else who's worked 7 days a week for many years building their own house. They had no choice. They couldn't begin to afford to hire someone to build, as most people do. Brian teaches art part-time at Sacred Heart Cathedral. Mary Jo is a graphic designer. Neither make a big salary. While other families have taken weekend trips, Brian and Mary Jo have been hanging drywall, painting, or roofing. They are San Francisco's working class. Look at what already has been done to them. The planning department has already decided they must demolish almost half their current house, taking the top floor off and reducing the size of their own house they and their children live in by some 40%. There had to be better solutions. The statute of justice carries a scale, not a hand grenade. That decision should be reviewed and reconsidered. The current controversy is primarily the work of one selfish neighbor who you just heard. Most of his complaints are trivial, like the bay window, and they are not supported by ordinance, such as the parking, which is, as currently proposed, simply within the parking ordinance. He carefully waited to complain about Brian and Mary Jo until he had finished all of the work on the two-unit building he bought next door to them, work done without permit. There were two or three years where we could see and hear the extensive remodeling of one or both of his units. Please regard this as a formal request. The planning department investigate all of that work he did without permit. Brian and Mary Jo are real heroes. I ask that you find a way to do the right thing for them. Thank you very much.
Thank you. So next member of the public, if there is one, for 349 Richland.
Hi, my name is...
Into the microphone, please. Here.
Hi, my name is Ricardo Aguilar. I have lived, moved in across the street at 346 Richland about 1992 with my partner of 30 years. So we've been there. When we moved in, the property across the street was a mess, actually, a couple of properties across the street. And there was a lot of, it was somewhat a little bit dangerous. And since then, it has changed, and it's much nicer neighborhood. And I'm here as a personal reference to say that my neighbors have been wonderful and pleasant, and I have no personal issue. Me and my partner don't have any personal issue with any of the work that's being done across the street. It's hasn't been offensive to us, but and we think of their family as wonderful neighbors.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Good morning. You're getting a lot of comment on this project. My name is Dr. Cynthia Berry. I'm the co-owner with Dr. Jeffrey Schwartz of the two-unit property, one downhill from where this is. I'm here to support their project. This was a difficult piece of property to work with, and I am a former planning commissioner from the city of Saratoga to the south of here, and so for 4 years, you know, we had to deal with difficult issues like this. There's a lot of variability in this area, as you've heard. Heights and setbacks and fronts, all of it is extremely variable, and that's, I think, an important consideration. Two points I want to make. Our parking was referenced as it's for four cars. Yes, it is, but it's tandem parking. And it's you couldn't get two, you know, old-fashioned Chevy. You couldn't get four old-fashioned Chevys in there. It's San Francisco parking. And Brian, we've had extensive conversations with Brian and Mary Jo and with their architect. Talk to us about our concerns. The height. The three houses in a row will be the same height if you grant their third-story variance. So in terms of how this neighborhood is going to look, it's actually going to look better with a third story than it does right now. I agree that the complaints of the neighbor are unfounded. Their parking, they violate the parking right now. And we've seen this. They park things in front of the fire hydrants. So I'm not sure about the reliability of that comment. Brian and Mary Jo are the kind of people that we want to keep in San Francisco. Yes, they've done this project slowly over time. They lived in this tiny little cottage that was not exactly habitable while they worked on it. So it hasn't been done in the normal fashion, but it's been done in good faith, with good work, and they have great relations with almost all of their neighbors. I agree with what Dr. Schwartz said about reviewing this request or decision to tear down the space that they currently live in. They have two children in school. It's a tiny little space that they're living in right now, but without it, I think you'll drive them out of San Francisco. And frankly, my son and daughter-in-law had to leave San Francisco. We built our place for them, and it was too expensive for them, so they had to leave. If Brian and Mary Jo have to go back to the drawing boards, I think you'll drive them out of San Francisco, and I don't think that serves the community good.
Thank you for your comments.
Thank you very much.
Is there any other public comment on this item?
Good morning, Mr. Sanchez. My name is Ryan Bordoni. I'm also a neighbor in Bernal Heights, a few blocks away on Crescent Avenue. I'm here in support of Mary Jo and Brian. I think that they've done a lot to improve the neighborhood. I also think that they are very valuable members of our community. I've known them for over 7 years and work with them. My children were with them in the school, the local school there, and I've never seen so much enthusiasm for improving community work with PTA, and I also want to echo previous statements about if they are driven out of San Francisco, it's not going to be a good thing for our community. In fact, I think it will be a very big downer for a lot of people. So that's all I have to say. Thank you.
Thank you.
Hello, my name is Nick Worthman. I'm also here in support of Brian and Mary Jo. I'm also a neighbor in Bernal Heights, a little bit further away. I don't know much about the technical details of their building and what's going on there. I have been close family friends with them for a number of years. Our children met in public school, and I mainly wanted to talk again about the benefit they are to the community. I've seen it firsthand. Their dedication to the school was a little bit unnerving, honestly, as someone who came to the school and saw how much time they put in to also see and understand what they've done in terms of improving their residential situation. To me, is impressive. San Francisco certainly seems to have a problem these days with keeping families here, and it would be very unfortunate if, for whatever reason, they had to move or anyone else has to move. Hopefully the situation can be resolved however it needs to be, but I feel as though they are people who greatly benefit the community, and everything should be done to keep them here. Thank you.
Thank you.
Hi, I'm Susanna Dunlap. I'm a property owner and resident of Bernal Heights for 15 years. We're on the same block as Mary Jo and Brian, and I fully support their request for the variance hearing. They're wonderful neighbors. I'm honestly embarrassed and appalled by how personal these attacks have become upon them, because they are valued members of the community. I don't have kids. I don't have kids in the public school, but I've seen the work they've done in founding the PTA. I saw the work they do when Lowe's was installed down at Bayshore and our traffic picked up. And it was Brian and another dad in our neighborhood that went door to door to petition to have speed bumps installed so that all of us would be safer in our community. Before they bought that property, it was the most dangerous lot on our block. I crossed the street at night before crossing that house, and I've lived in an urban environment my whole life. I'm not afraid of much at night, but I was afraid of that property. And when Brian and Mary Jo started making the improvements, our block immediately improved. They've done nothing but try to help the community. And so, honestly, the character assassinations seem so unreasonable to me. And so I guess what I hope is that we can apply everything fairly to them. They are doing everything they can to come into compliance. And I'm a little surprised by Jeff, who I've never met, making the statements he made when he himself is applying standards of safety and working for the benefit of permits that he hasn't applied to himself. We all seen the work he's done. We've all seen how he's actually converted things that none of us have complained about. But, you know, just be careful what you say about other people, because there are going to be other members of the community. He does not speak for me. I don't think I speak for the neighborhood. I can only speak for myself. But if I don't come today and speak on behalf of someone who's a pillar of our community, who's part of the fabric of working class San Francisco, then I would be ashamed of myself. So I hope that you guys allow them the time to bring their apartment into compliance and for their family to stay in San Francisco.
Thank you.
Good morning. Merle Malakoff, resident at 338 Park Street, which is abuts the property behind off one to one corner. I want to speak to the zoning issues. Well, first, let me state I'm in support of the granting of the requested variances. My belief and trust in the department and department staff is that you're going to ensure that the project meets all of the city's requirements. There is a request for a couple of variances, some related to historic legalization of work that was permitted, is my understanding. The other, the principal variance requested is for relief of setbacks between the rear cottage, which is a historic structure, and the front structure, which has been there for quite some time. And in exchange for granting approval for the reduced distance between those two structures, the city gains another housing unit. It seems like a better than a fair trade for the neighborhood, for the city. And I don't think that it impacts negatively any of the surrounding properties because the height of the front structure would be within height limits. The granting the variance allows a legalization of two units on the lot. It's an R2 zoning, so that's conforming. In fact, from my perspective, the reduction of the roof form on the rear structure, which is the one closest to my property, is a benefit to me. So I see nothing but good from this project and urge your support. Thank you.
Good morning. My name is Suzanne Walker, and I've owned and lived on Richland Avenue for 21 years. And let me just begin by saying how disappointed and saddened I am to have to be here this morning, that until 5 years ago, we never had any kind of neighborly dispute like this. I'm not that different, really, than the McHughes. I bought a property that nobody else wanted, that essentially probably in hindsight should have been torn down. I'm in a non-conforming lot. It's a two-unit building, and if it weren't for that building, myself, my wife, and the tenants that we rent to downstairs at well below market value, none of us would still be here in the city. Housing is the linchpin to being able to keep the working class in Bernal Heights. The reason why I took time out of my workday to come here this morning is I'm really galled by Jeff's double standard. We have all listened and seen work that he has done on his property without the benefit of permits, and the extent to which he's berating the McHughes over the same thing is really distressing to me. And, you know, it's a side of Bernal that, let's face it, we're close to the freeway. We're not far off of Alamany until very recently. Nobody really tracked what was going on that block. And those of us who were lucky enough to have grabbed a little piece of property, there was a real cooperative spirit in trying to help each other improve our properties so that we could have somewhere to live. Mary Jo and Brian, they're awesome. They started the PTA at J. Sarah. They did the speed bumps when our traffic patterns changed. We pass them every day. They walk our street every day. And they've just been such a positive force for the community. And I wish that some of our newer neighbors could be as positive a force. Let me just mention, I feel like there's a lot of these red herrings being thrown out around the parking issues. Jeff doesn't park in his garage. He's done some work in his garage that would prohibit that. He put in an office space. In fact, he often parks in front of the fire hydrant. The other woman who commented on parking, she doesn't park in her garage. In fact, she lives in her garage in an in-law unit that was built there. So, you know, people, parking might become an issue, but parking works out okay. I don't have a conforming parking situation either. I just hope that you guys can follow reason to help resolve this issue and move it forward. You know, I really think the McHughes are who we want to see remain in the city. So thank you very much for your time.
Thank you.
Hello, my name is Nicole McGrath, and I live five doors up.
I wasn't planning to speak today. I just came in support. However, I've listened to some of the comments about honesty and character, and I just felt like I had to get up just to let you know the type of people that Brian and Mary Jo are. They are probably the best neighbors we've ever had. I mean, they really are honest, hardworking, positive. They're always willing to help. They are out in the community. Whenever anything's needed, they are always there to support. And honesty-wise, they're the type of people, well, I know Brian and Mary Jo have been very distressed by all of this, and I think in terms of honesty, they have great honesty, and I don't think that they knowingly would have done any of this or tried to be sneaky. They're not those type of people. I think they have tried to do everything on the up and up as much as possible, and perhaps they were led astray by someone else, and it's because of their desire to believe in people and their desire to be honest and believe that of other people. So I just wanted to let you know, as character-wise, they are just... they're such a great part of the community, and it would be very, very sad to lose them. So I really hope that this can be resolved in a way that we can keep them as neighbors, because they really are excellent. Thank you.
Hi, good morning. John McGrath. That's my wife, Nicole. I'm sorry I didn't come up with her. I, too, am neighbors, Nicole and I, with the McHughes. We've lived in Bernal since 2000. Like the McHughes, like one of the other neighbors you've heard from, our house was on the market for 6 months at the dot-com time, and nobody wanted it because it was a wreck. And it was affordable for us because it was a wreck. And we moved in and made it better and made a place to live. We now have 3 kids whom we live with. I feel a little emotional. I'm sorry. Because, you know, they say it just takes one bad apple to spoil the bunch. In this case, we have 2. There is a reason, and it didn't happen yesterday, that all these people came here to speak today. It's because of the character of the McHughes. And the absolute selfishness that has been displayed by the bad apples. They enjoy 2 units each. They don't park in their properties, they park on the street. I understand that the 3rd floor of the McHugh property is allowable under the code. It's okay to have a building that tall. Unfortunately for Mr. Brown, when he moved in, he had a view that he enjoyed because that 4 wasn't there, which is now obstructed, and that's what's behind this. He wants it his way, despite what the code says. He wants it his way. It's not fair. It's a double standard. You've heard lots of testimony about this. And the McHughes, I mean, I couldn't say enough about them, about what good people they are. And, you know, this is a good neighborhood. This is a close community. And it's unfortunate that things have changed, but that's okay. You know, it is what it is. We do not have a particularly hard neighborhood to park in. It's really not a big deal if there's 2 units there and there's a couple extra cars. It's not Nob Hill. It's not Chinatown. It's not some of these areas where people don't move their car once they find a spot. So I don't know that I have anything further to say except that I absolutely support this request. And they've been through a lot on this. I know that they're personal friends of mine. They were just appalled to find out they didn't have the correct information. It was a shock. And to have this stalled and this hanging over their heads. Mr. Brown, he complains about having to look at the plywood. This project could move forward if he would remove his ridiculous objections. He just wants it his way. And he wants it. It's unfair. It's not appropriate for the neighborhood. These people deserve to go through with this project. 2 units. Great. Let's have a separate. It'd be awesome to have another unit in this city that people can live in. I mean, housing is scarce in this city, and I really hope that you approve their project. Thank you.
Thank you. Any other public comment on this item? Seeing none, project sponsor, you have a 3-minute rebuttal.
Thank you. Thank you for having me back. Obviously, there's a lot of people who are very moved by what the McHughes have done, and I don't need to speak to that. There's some factual things I just would like to go over. So out of the variances that we're requesting, the front yard variance and the rear yard variance, those are corrective action. One is on previously unpermitted work, and one is corrective action on work that was permitted. The remaining variance that's being asked for is an exposure variance. The exposure variance is related to creating a two-unit property out of this. It's our understanding that the third floor could be built in its current configuration on the lot and make a large single-family house, but the exposure variance is allowing that to be a reasonable two-unit building. As I mentioned before, the square footages of those houses are 1,300 and 1,400 respectively, the kind of sizes that a family could conceivably live in, 900 or 800 square foot efficiency as it would be if a third story was removed. Regarding light and air for the adjacent neighbor, I want to talk about some of the conversations we had. You can see here on the lot land, there is a light well in this location. This is there's the primary windows and the secondary windows. The third story doesn't obstruct either the primary or the secondary windows. As I understand the code, that we are required to set back from a light well for a minimum or maximum of 3 feet from the property line just for the area of the light well, but instead the entire addition is setting back for well over 3 feet for the entire length of the building, giving more light and air to that light well. That's a mid-span view. It's bathrooms. It's secondary windows and rooms. We also met with that project sponsor, and we were not able to come to that homeowner on multiple occasions. If you've heard, we're not able to come to a conclusion. One of the things that we had opted to do is that we would lower the ceiling height for this section of the building to 7'6" high and then pop up later, have it at code minimum there to give him more light and air. That wasn't acceptable, so we didn't pursue that option. What he was asking for was more of a penthouse stair landing for a roof deck, and so not being able to really make that into a usable second house. Regarding garage, we've been at this a long time, so we know that we have a 35-foot garage and that four cars could probably squeeze in there, but we're trying to provide tandem since we're doing the change of use to a legal two-unit. So those were, and then just a note when we talk about who they used historically and how they got to this, if you look at who signed their permits or who was their engineer, it was Jimmy Jang. I mean, they were taken down a certain route, and I think that that's part of why we've ended up here. So, thank you.
Thank you. So your clients currently reside in the rear building?
Currently, yes.
And given that there'll be work there to reduce the size of that, will they in the future relocate to the front building, or what's the plan?
What's the phasing plan? Because it depends on what way they're going to probably have to do one at a time, but we know that it has to be a joint permit for this. Has to final together to bring the property back into compliance. They would like to phase the construction of it to finish one unit, live in it while the other one gets dismantled. So that would be the goal of how to get about it, but knowing that it couldn't final until it was all done.
What was the goal, you know, when they were working without permits? I mean, in adding that third story, what was their plan at that point to the front building?
You know, I should let them speak to it. I know just as a standby that I know that they were kind of guided to, if you look at the permits, you can see that the third story is above the parapet. Just under 7 feet, so it looks like we don't have to notice neighbors for it. Like they were being guided to do things a certain way.
Was the plan to have a new unit in the front without the permit? Or?
The plan was to put a new unit in the front, but I really can't. If you look at, I mean, you saw the permit history. We gave it to you. I mean, we gave you all the copies of it. It's convoluted. So, yes, they were being guided a certain way.
And then, I guess it was the plan that you would eventually live in the front building? And
I'm not going to live there. Can't afford it.
So the front building would be rented out?
I don't know what the plan. I don't know what the original plan was. We should ask the homeowner to answer that.
Sorry, I didn't realize you were there.
The original plan was to hope to stay in the back unit and create the front unit as a rental.
Okay.
Yeah.
And more specifically, we just have our mothers.
We have lots of extended family.
So we're hoping one of the moms
to the front building.
Yeah. Okay.
And then in terms of maybe you got bad advice throughout this process and Mr. Jen's name came up, and how long and when was he advising you from as your engineer of record?
Oh, well, it
We were working with George Tsang, another person. We didn't know this other gentleman was even involved.
Okay.
He signed all the building permits, though.
He's as the engineer of record. Yeah. Okay. Thank you, everyone.
Thanks.
So with that, I'll close the public hearing. I appreciate all the extensive testimony on this. I do think it's fair to note that this is not a question of character. When reviewing these applications, reviewing them against planning code requirements around our residential design guidelines, those are the standards of our review. It's not about the character of the property owner or the character of a neighbor who may be opposed to the project. We're reviewing this for requirements that are in our codes. And so I think, with that said, that in reviewing this, I do find that there are justifications to support a variance given the existing legal non-complying structure located within the required rear yard that do support the variances that they're seeking here. It is extremely unfortunate and disappointing that this work was conducted without permit. Hopefully that will no longer be the case with this property moving forward. I think everyone is well aware of the permitting requirements, and if there does appear to be work without permit being done by anyone, that they contact the Department of Building Inspection, and they will send an inspector out to confirm whether or not the appropriate permits have been obtained. So with that, again, closing the public hearing, inclined to grant the requested variance, and we can move on to the next item. Thank you.
Okay, so item 7 was moved to the consent calendar at the beginning of the hearing, so we're moving on to item number 8, case 2013.0783V at 26 Hodges Alley, seeking a rear yard variance. Project sponsor, you have 5 minutes.
Hi.
Good afternoon. Let me...
Jody Knight from Rubin, Junius & Rose on behalf of the project sponsor. I have here with me today architect Heidi Levis, also contractor for the project Day Hilborn, and geotechnical engineer Frank Rollo. Heidi's going to describe the project, but Day or Frank can take any questions moving forward.
Thank you.
Hi. The project at 26 Hodges is on a property that is 17 feet wide by 62 feet 11 inches deep. This is a very small lot compared to the typical lot size of 25 feet by 100 feet in San Francisco. The project is an interior remodel and an addition of an existing two-story house. The addition consists of a vertical addition which does not require a variance, and a small horizontal addition that is within the rear yard setback. The existing house was originally built within the rear yard setback, which is 45% for RH2 zoning. Therefore, any work we do to the existing house within the last 45% of the property would require a variance. The existing house currently has two sets of stairs on each floor, which we found inefficient. So in this project, we would like to relocate the main interior stair to a better location and enclose the existing exterior rear stairs to include more living area into the small house. Enclosing the rear stair is basically the extent of work that requires a variance. And so you can see on the rendering that I provided, the area for the rear stair is... just right here. We work closely with the next door neighbor, that would be the house in the sort of light green, who is most affected by the project, and she is in support of our project. The project is on a steep hill, and hill stabilization work is included in this project, although it is not part of the variance. It's not required for, a variance isn't required for that work. This hill stabilization work does benefit a lot of parties on the hill. We're hoping that would be helpful with the neighbors, although that work is governed by Department of Building Inspections. That's kind of...
Thank you.
Just to quickly run through the variance factors and how they're met in this case, the exceptional or extraordinary circumstances are a very small lot with essentially no rear yard setback, and really to make this a usable single-family home and allow for circulation within the home, the variance is necessary for the otherwise code-compliant addition. The literal enforcement would prevent the code-compliant addition from being constructed. Again, the way that the circulation works in the house, it just really can't work unless we enclose that stairwell, and there's no way to enclose that stairwell without the variance, given the fact that there's really no room on the side of the property. The variance is necessary to preserve a substantial property right. It's required in order to make the house a usable home. The variance will not be materially detrimental to the public. There's really one property that's impacted by the variance, which is the enclosure of the stairwell. 30 Hodges, as Heidi said, that owner is here and is fully in support of the project. You'll hear from her in a bit. And the granting of the variance is in harmony with the purpose and intent of the code and will not adversely affect the master plan. It simply allows a property owner to make a reasonable use of their property in order to use it for a single-family home. Thank you.
Thank you. So do you have an existing photo sim, or is it just the proposed that you have? But if you do have it,
not in rendering.
Okay.
Not in the rendering.
That's fine.
Sorry.
That's all right. And then the story addition, that is within the buildable area, not subject to the variance. So
exactly.
We're just looking at the enclosure of the stairs along the north side property line, and that's abutting the property at, is it 30
Hodges.
30 Hodges.
Yes.
Okay. Thank you. We'll see if there's more public comment.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you. So if we can move on to public comment, and again, we are on item number 8 for 26 Hodges Alley. Any members of the public who would like to speak at this time?
Okay, you have 3 minutes.
Morning, Mr. Sanchez. Steve Williams. I'm representing the Marr family who own the property at 358 and 360 Vallejo, which also abuts the proposed project. I don't have a rendering, but this is the current situation. There is essentially an open shaft running down 25 feet the length of the property. It's on a very steep cliff. The building sits between 20 and 25 feet above the Marr home, which is right on the property line. Here's the Marr home here, and here's the subject property directly above. And so obviously filling in that light shaft is going to cast shadows down the cliff. The cliff is crumbling and in need of repair, and in fact, there's currently notice of violations on several properties in the vicinity due to the crumbling cliff. A little surprising that the department accepted an application for a new project while that notice of violation was pending. Usually, you require the repair before accepting new projects, such as a variance application during the pendency of a violation. The neighbors generally oppose any expansion or all alteration to this non-complying structure. It's not an extraordinary exceptional circumstance. There are real light impacts. The project, we don't believe, generally complies with the planning code or the general plan. And I think that there may be additional variances needed here in order to fill this in at three different floors. First, let me speak to the issue of whether this is an exceptional or extraordinary circumstance. The only reason given to date is the incredibly small size of the lot. That's the norm in this vicinity. You'll see the yellow is the subject property. There are 6 lots on Hodges Alley, which are smaller. The lot next door is 1,006 square feet. The next lot is 600 square feet. This lot is 650 square feet. This is 1,100, and this one is 875. So this is the norm in the vicinity. If you compare it to the larger city, obviously, it's a different picture. So the variance, as I said, fills it in at 3 floors. I know there's a section that allows you to put a deck on top of a non-complying structure such as this, but I'm not sure that zoning administrator interpretation applies to new construction, which this is. This is building the third floor and then putting a deck on it. So I think that would be stretching that particular interpretation further than it currently stands. So I think you need to look at that, whether this is truly a situation where only this one variance is needed.
Thank you. So what other variances are you suggesting are required? They're seeking a rear yard variance, so which other variances would they need?
Well, the expansion of the non-complying structure, which I know that there was an interpretation in January, which means that this is held in there. But to place a deck at the third floor, there's an expansion going on at the third floor. The deck expansion is entirely within the rear yard at the third floor. And as I said, there's an interpretation which allows the placement of a deck on an existing structure. A flat roof on an existing structure. But this is more than that. This is the construction of that structure and then the placement of the deck on that structure.
But the deck is part of the project, which is within the required rear yard, and that's the variance that they're seeking.
But there is, the stipulation in the description of the variance says there's no variance needed at the third floor. And my read of that zoning administrator interpretation says there is a variance needed for the third floor.
And it's not clear exactly what the scope of the project is and that they're seeking to put a deck on top here?
Yes. I mean, obviously you need a variance for the first and the second floor since it's entirely within the rear yard to fill in that light well. But then the placement of the deck at the third floor is also entirely within the rear yard.
And how large is your client's property? How many square feet is that one?
There's two buildings. It's a historic property. There's two buildings, one in the rear yard and one at the front on Vallejo. So there's a structure back here and a structure here. But I believe they actually have the required rear yard, though, if you count the center yard and then the rear yard. It's just they have this historic structure with the two Victorian buildings.
And so can you put that photo up again that shows the impact on your client's property? And so this is looking at the rear wall of your client's property, of the rearmost building of your client's property. Is that
correct?
And so the infill is going to be, can you maybe show on the overhead where the infill may be?
Here's the building. Here's the where we were just looking.
Right.
And as the sun comes, here's the southern exposure. As the sun comes around, light streams down the shaft because it's all the way to the ground currently.
And so are there windows on your client's property that open onto that shaft?
There are light wells on that side because of it abuts the cliff.
Right. And so I'm just trying to figure out how the sun is going to impact windows on your client's property, and because the adjacent building to the north already extends basically to the rear property line. Do you have a photo of that? Or maybe you could put that photo back on the overhead. I just want to try to.
Yes.
And so what is kind of at the top of the photo, that deck, is that the adjacent property at 30 Hodges?
This one here?
Yeah.
Yes, it is.
Okay. And so then the other property is just kind of in the center.
Yeah, here's 26. And there's two light wells on this blind wall here. And that's really the concern because this building has trouble getting light because of the cliff and because of the houses which come to the very edge of the cliff, actually creating more shadow.
And so they're infill of the or kind of covering of the stairs doesn't actually extend to the rear property line. And the light well that's on your client's property is actually located to the south. And so I guess I'm kind of...
Well, it will extend to the rear property line at the ground floor. Ground floor and at the second floor. And it's only held back on the third floor. But right now, this is open all the way down. And it's a little disingenuous to put in the variance description that it doesn't extend the overall depth of the building. Because, I mean, you're filling in a light well, a stair which functions as a light well. You're filling that in for 25 feet all the way to the ground. And you can really see that at the rear views, if you look at the existing rear view.
I don't see it extending to the rear property line on the plans, but I will let the architect you know, describe that when they present. Okay, but thank you. If I can think of any more questions, I'll let you know. Thank you. Any other public comment for this item? And we're on item number 8 for 26 Hodges Alley.
Thank you, Mr. Sanchez. My family has owned Free Fund.
Into the microphone, please.
Okay. My family has owned, my name is Melody Marr, and my family has owned 358-360 Vallejo Street for over 40 years. It is our position that a variance hearing is inappropriate because the engineers in this case have not agreed on how to stabilize the unstable slope in which 26 Hodges sits on in the rear. All the neighbors there have notice of violations. To the left, to the right of 26 Hodges, there's also notice of violations because there is a crumbling cliff there. And it is on the geotonic report. You'll see everybody is on a crumbling cliff there. So my concern is when they start construction, how are they going to also stabilize their adjacent neighbor's crumbling cliff so it won't affect my house downhill? Our family's engineer is John Wallace of Cotton Shires and Associates. Mr. Wallace and his firm investigated and designed the repair plans for the last two catastrophic Telegraph Hill landslides, one in 2007, one block from my house, and one in 2012, a few blocks away. Mr. Wallace and his firm has peer-reviewed the two proposed plans that have been set forth and indicated that they will not work. He has reviewed their most recent design and indicated it has not worked and has met with 26 Hodges engineer Luke Gilpin, who is the geological engineer for that project. Mr. Gilpin agreed with Mr. Wallace that the new plan that they have presented will not work. And so, you know, we're still working on how to stabilize a crumbling cliff, so I don't think a variance is appropriate when you're wanting to, asking permission to add more weight on a crumbling cliff when you haven't decided how you're going to fix a crumbling cliff. And I'm very distressed at this. So I believe that you have received the letter from Cotton Shires and Associates. I spoke with Kate Connor, and you have received it. That this plan, that is the first plan, they abandoned because it's not going to work. So the second plan is discussed in the letter that Mr. Wallace has written. I don't have much time, so I want to go next. I think the architect has been somewhat unfair in her renderings and her images of my house. My house is adjacent and downhill from her, and she has left my house out of all the pictures of the images. I'm actually right over here, and she's basically in the renderings and the images of impact. My house is just not seen. It's missing. And I think that's extremely unfair and unethical of this architect to do that. And I have alerted the planner, Kate Connor, about that. I also live in the house in the rear, and the residential design guidelines protect the airline privacy of houses in the rear. They indicate they have a 9-inch rear yard. They do not. They have a zero-inch rear yard. In the third floor deck, we do not want the building envelope to extend any further than the existing stairs. And all my neighbors have 3 to 5 feet setbacks for their decks. They don't have that. We don't want the infill in the second floor because that's going to affect all my windows and my backyard. And how can they go 5 feet 6 inches beyond the adjacent neighbor's wall? That's just unfair. And in the ground floor, they have a new 1-hour rated guardrail that is a solid wall. We want that to be a fire rated glass. That's affecting all my light. And we want to reserve the right to ask for the structural work because John Wallace wants to see their foundation plan. He wants to see their structural work, how they're going to seismically upgrade all the decks in the back.
So that's your time.
Yes.
So do you have a question? So yes. Mr. Gilpin is working with Mr. Wallace, or is Mr. Gilpin working for the project sponsor?
Mr. Gilpin is a geologic engineer, as you know, represents 26 Hodges, and he and all the others wrote the geotechnical report, and Mr. Wallace of Cotton Shires asked for an experts meeting because he was very concerned at the second plan. He has he asked for an experts meeting with Mr. Gilpin, Mr. Rollo, who's of course the geotechnical engineer, and Brent Harris, who is with Soil Engineering Company. He is the specialty contractor. Okay, so he wanted an experts meeting with all three. And the response from 26 Hodges is they wanted Lou Gilpin to have a meeting for lunch with Mr. Wallace. So Mr. Wallace went to lunch with Mr. Gilpin to discuss his concerns. And at that time, Mr. Gilpin said he agreed with him that the second design is not going to work.
Okay. And in regards to the rendering, which did not show your property, have you requested that the rendering be revised to show your property?
I have asked Heidi to do that, and her answer is she doesn't know the slope or whatever. And I said, you know, maybe you can just put my house in there and say maybe the slope is or is not accurate, but can you put my house in there?
Okay, thank you. And then just to clarify, too, so, I mean, this is a variance seeking authorization to construct something of this envelope, which is within the required rear yard. The variance itself does not actually authorize any construction activity. They would still need the building permit, which would need to go through proper review and engineering before any construction activity. Just wanted to make sure that you understood that as well. But thank you, and we'll see if there's any other public comment.
Okay, thank you.
Any other public comment on this item? And we're on item number 8 for 26 Hodges Alley.
Good morning. My name is Richard Woon. My family owns the property at 1114 1118 Montgomery Street. We've owned the property for more than 50 years. We oppose the variance because we believe that no extraordinary circumstances exist, and the project does not comply with the residential design guidelines and the general plan. In particular, the front setback is insufficient as it will cause Hodges Alley to receive insufficient light and air. That's both sunlight and moonlight. Hodges Alley is a one-lane alley, and one of the unique problems that we face in the neighborhood is the Broadway, called the Broadway riffraff on Fridays and Saturday nights. They migrate up the street, and they hang out where it is convenient, particularly where it is dark. At this point, there are already security guards posted at the bottom of Broadway frequently. We've finally gotten rid of police barricades at Vallejo Street, but you know they still migrate that way, and the current setback of 5 feet 8 inches. To be very honest, I'm quite surprised that the setback was so small. Shortly after the community meeting, I went down to planning and I spoke with two planners at the desk, and they sort of assured me that the setback would have to be a lot more substantial, at least as deep as the addition will be high, and probably 15 feet is what they told me. So I'm quite surprised about that. And I just received the last notification last week. And it also my understanding that there were comments in planning that the setback was insufficient at some point in time. So, again, we oppose the variance.
Thank you. So you're representing the property, and it was at
1114, 1118 Montgomery.
Thank you.
And we also have I believe our lot's smaller than theirs, too.
Is your lot a through lot all the way to Hodges Alley? Or?
No, it's not.
Okay. So you walk down Vallejo to get to Hodges,
yeah.
And so your concerns are related to the...
It's related to the attraction of loiterers and the pot smokers, the drinkers, the general criminals that
night,
come around. Yeah.
At night, because the setback is not enough.
It's going to make it into a dark alley, susceptible to criminal activity.
Are there any streetlights on the alley?
I don't know. I'm not sure, actually.
So that may be an alternative. But because that addition is not actually within the rear yard, so it's not part of the approval that they're
seeking. I understand that. I'm completely surprised that I thought that the setback was, when the plans were going to be submitted, I thought it was just going to be set back at least 10, 15 feet. And that's because that's what planning told me.
Does your property have at all a view of this property?
Yeah.
Or?
Yeah, we do.
Okay.
We do have a view. I think that they have a right to make an addition, but I am concerned about that setback.
Okay.
Okay.
All right. Thank you. Any other public comment on this item? And we're on item number 8 for 26 Hodges Alley.
Hello, my name is Karen Ezekiel, and I live at 30 Hodges Alley, directly to the north of 26. As I understood it, this meeting was just about the variance. Mm-hmm. which has to do with the closing in of the sky of the stairwell. This does not affect me. It's been mocked up for quite a long time, and I'm fine with it. So it, the building does shadow my skylight, and the people next door have promised to help me with that issue. So I have no objection to this project. The crumbling hillside is a whole other matter that I don't think belongs right here.
Thank you. Is there any other public comment on this item? And we're on item number 8 for 26 Hodges.
I'm Ray Liu. I'm the co-owner with my wife Annie under the Liu Wong Trust of a wooden single unit house, the 600 feet small one that attorney Steve Williams mentioned. It was built around 1900 and it's located at 20 Hodges Alley. Our building is directly next door and downhill south to 26 Hodges, owned by Mr. DeWitty. Now, 20 Hodges is towards the front and middle of the DeWitty's property. Incidentally, our house was inhabited by a Lake Tahoe riverboat captain, John Hodges, from which Hodges Alley was named. We understand today that our neighbor DeWitty, through their architect, Ms. Heidi Liebes, is seeking for a variance to extend the deck horizontally, but eventually an additional story is going to go up to 30 feet. We do object to the deck extension, which may impact eventually the foundation. Common sense about the additional weight would dictate the enlargement of the current foundation. Since the property is located on the famous Telegraph Hillside, there is significant concern and reservation about the stability of the sandstone, shell, and graywack sandstone composition from which the foundation would be strengthened. Groundwater seepage and adverse bedding also has been documented by the 26 Hodges Geotechnical Studies of Gilpin Geosciences Incorporated. There is anticipated drilling of a cavity or even cavities of indeterminate depths and content depending on the discovery during the excavation. Our downhill property foundation also shared in this potential wedge-type rock block failure, especially during earthshaking in the Richter magnitude of 5.5 and above. But our over-century-old, 90% solid redwood house survived the notable 1906 and 1989 Loma Prieta earthquakes without structural damage. The assumption can be made that there was no disturbance to the fragile topography. Now, disturbance during the mechanical drilling can weaken our foundation from fibration with resultant damage. Will the DeWitty's indemnify us and to make whole in event of our house shifting and slipping off of its foundation after a future earthquake caused by their foundation work? So in conclusion, I have two additional concerns and expectations. On 22nd September, there was an informal gathering of some 7-8 persons either connected with the project and concerned neighbors in the garage of 26 Hodges to view the schemata and the visual inspection.
Sir, that was your time, but if you could just wrap up this very final thought, please.
Right. Thank you. In fact, I was the one that requested that we take a visual look at the property of 358 Vallejo and also how that interface with 26 Hodges' proposal. And finally, there has been no neighborhood gathering between the initial one and February 2013, when the preliminary proposed draft plans were unveiled, and the finalized one just 2 days ago. Our understanding...
Thank you, sir. That's really your time.
Yeah, only a few people were involved. Okay. And hopefully in the...
thank you.
In,
thank
in
you
the for, future, thank you other comments. People will be sought.
Thank you.
For their input.
Any other public comment on this item?
Hi there, Mr. Sanchez. My name is Lisa Lim, and I'm representing 29 and 31 Hodges Alley. We're across the street. Our building has been owned by our family for the last 45 years. And I'm speaking against the request to seek the rear yard variance for 26 Hodges. I don't believe that the owner has met the high standards set in the findings to allow this type of variance. I think it's a misstatement to say that only the only affected neighbor is in 30 Hodges, because we are all in an alley, and so we're all affected. In this case, I don't see any exceptional or extraordinary circumstance which would warrant allowing 26 Hodges to virtually eliminate their rear yard. I don't think that inefficiency of design is any extraordinary circumstance. We've been told that the owners want to renovate the building to accommodate a family, but the current size of the building is larger than the other properties currently on Hodges Alley, and those houses have been family homes. In fact, if they're allowed to attain their variance, 26 Hodges would be the only three-story single-family home in that alley. They're proposing a three-bedroom, three-bath house with a separate kitchen, living room, dining room, and a large deck on the third floor in a one-car garage. And so, like I said, this is a large single-family dwelling in an alley full of cottages and small multifamily rental units. They seek a variance to maximize living space by eliminating the rear yard that's required by the planning code. And right now, Hodges Alley is the only property with no rear yard on the east side of that alley. And allowing them to build out the second floor eliminates all of the light, air, and space that the backyards are really designed to provide. I think literal enforcement of the code would not result in any unnecessary hardship for the owner. It's only going to require them to reduce some living space and reduce the size of the huge outdoor deck that they would be afforded by this variance. But if you allow this variance, it would place a heavy burden on the neighbors. So the owners of the 26 Hodges is really primarily interested in maximizing view access for his property, and granting them the variance would materially injure neighboring properties by obstructing air, light, and privacy. After all, we're in an alley, but it's only 17 feet wide and in very small lots, as you've heard. So the neighbors would bear the disproportionate impact of the larger structure as they maximize their economic gain from this property. At neighbor meetings, we voice concerns about the geology impacts, the air, light, and privacy issues, but the owners haven't come up with any changes to their plans to respond to these concerns. They haven't engaged us in any meaningful dialogue and haven't attempted to mitigate the size or the impact of the proposed plans for the building. The only neighbors they've really been talking to is in 30 Hodges, and she's the only supporter in the neighborhood for this project. And when we ask questions, all we get are vague answers. So as I see it, variances are exceptions to the planning code and only granted if there is extraordinary circumstance. And the owners have not met this standard. They haven't proven that it would be a hardship to create livable space in the existing floor plan without the variance, because they haven't bothered to try. So in addition to failing to meet the standards of the required findings, the owners still haven't devised a workable solution to the serious geotechnical issues raised by our neighbors. And that slope stabilization is a concern for all of us.
Thank you. So, now again, the variance is to enclose the stairs that are along the side of the property in the required rear yard, directly abutting 30 Hodges. You're across the street from 30 Hodges. How is it that it impacts the light and air to your property?
That particular enclosure does not, but the variance is sort of what I see as a stepping stone for moving on to developing full plans to develop the second floor and then to add the third floor.
So are you mainly opposed to the third-story addition?
Yes.
Okay. Thank you.
But I do support my neighbor's concerns and about the whole light and air access.
The size and the stability issues. Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
Any other members of the public to speak on this item? Item number 8 for 26 Hodges. Seeing none, project sponsor, you have a 3-minute rebuttal, and if during that time you could additionally address the current status of the building permit application, the NOV that was cited previously, as well as efforts for the slope stabilization.
Great. Yes. It's my understanding that this project is to address the notice of violation. We can't do the project without addressing that, and that is a DBI issue. We've been working with the top geotechnical engineer in the city, Frank Rollo. He's here to describe how we've also worked with the downhill neighbor regarding those issues, and very open to more discussion. But again, it's a building department issue.
Hi, my name is Frank Rollo. I'm a geotechnical engineer. I'm assisting Dr. Lou Gilpin of Gilpin Geosciences regarding the geologic and geotechnical issues associated with the slope adjacent to 26 Hodges. I have been involved in Telegraph Hill since 1964. The two projects that Cotton Shire worked on came at my request as the geotechnical engineer for the city and county of San Francisco. I required that the slope above Broadway and the slope on Chestnut be rock bolted, and recommended that Cotton Shire be retained because I have a high regard for John Wallace, very good geologist. I put him, he and Lou, on the same plane. We've prepared several reports, three as a matter of fact. The first alternative we rejected because it would be too difficult to bring the iron up through Green Street to do the work. We then came up with another plan that included vertical tie downs and a mesh. That proposal appeared feasible. The owners of the home of the property on Vallejo retained Cotton Shire, John Wallace, who reviewed our work and concluded that the vertical members, if drilled in a north-south plane, may cause additional fracturing. Dr. Gilpin met with him. We agreed. He also felt that it would be more prudent to use shotcrete in lieu of a mesh. We agreed. We all agreed that scaling needed to be done. So we have, in fact, developed a plan for a shotcrete wall because it's not a planning issue. Didn't complete it, but it will be included. John suggested that if tiebacks are needed, they should be put in a east-west direction away from the face so they wouldn't cause any additional loosening. If necessary, we will do that because we had tie downs in our original plan. Our goal is to mitigate the rock fall in the most effective manner, and I believe that John's suggestions were very good. The question is how many bolts we would need in the east-west direction because we're getting away from the face and we're getting to more massive sandstone. With regard to foundation support for the deck, we've discussed that with the architects and believe that any work that's done should be done adjacent to the building rather than out toward the face of the slope, and any deck would be cantilevered so that it would not impact the performance of the slope.
So it seems that you've done some extensive work here to look at various scenarios. You've rejected two so far, you're on the third, and you would say that this is not an insurmountable problem to develop something that would work for this project and just to address the slope stability in general?
The rock stability can be addressed. We've addressed it on Alta Street. We addressed it on Broadway. We addressed it on Chestnut Street. There are many alternatives. In fact, we're working with Cotton Shire right now. They represent the 240-280 Lombard, and we have recommended that they be retained to evaluate the rock fall potential on that, and they're coming up for a plan on that. Yeah, we know the challenges. There are solutions. What limits us most of the time is the steepness of the slope and the difficulty of getting equipment to do the work. The key thing is to properly scale the slope before you put the shotcrete on.
And it seems you've had a successful collaborative experience working with Mr. Wallace to develop an improved project. That seems fair to say.
Oh, absolutely. Since I guess John's only been practicing about 20 years, I've been practicing about 50. So I'd say about 20 years now, we've been working well together.
And then in terms of the building permit process, would this require peer review once it goes to Department of Building Inspection or for review?
I don't know. I don't know how Mr. Huey or Ed Sweeney and that group would want to handle it, but I'm all for it. I mean, anytime you can get another set of eyes, and especially if their eyes are John Wallace's, or they can improve the design. I mean, I'm currently doing three for the city right now, so.
Okay.
Yeah.
Thank you very much. Appreciate your time.
You're welcome.
And I have one question about the rendering here. So that does show the adjacent property, correct?
No, I'm sorry, Melody. I show this is your house right here. And then here's another rendering where I tried to show from your rear yard. And I couldn't, you know, in my model, I couldn't see how the stair enclosure would affect her at all.
You can maybe just with your finger show kind of approximately where that stair enclosure is.
Stair enclosure is right there, okay. And I couldn't get that view from my model, and that was like.
Thank you.
Yeah, and the infill does not extend to the rear yard property line.
And the building permit application, the Section 311 has not yet
gone out.
Great. All right. Okay. Thank you.
Okay, thank you.
With that, I'll close the public hearing. Appreciate everyone's comments on this matter. I have, I think very high confidence here that the building permit application, any building permit application, even if there was no variance here, that the slope issues would be addressed. It seems like there's a very well-qualified team on board that's committed to seeing that happen. In regards to just the variance itself, I do see exceptional extraordinary circumstances here, given the lot size and the lot width at 17 feet wide is quite substandard. So with that, public hearing is closed. Be inclined to grant the requested variance, and we can move on to the next item. Thank you.
Okay, moving on to item number 9, case 2014.0649V at 443 Broderick Street, seeking a rear yard variance. Project sponsor, please approach the microphone. Yes.
Hello. So we have the conundrum that we have is that we have an existing deck that has been on the property since before the time we purchased the property. We purchased a TIC. See that? Okay. It's upside down. Let's try that. Can you see that? Okay. And this is, you have this plan, I believe, as well. So, our existing property has an existing deck that never had drawings done, and it was done prior to us purchasing the property as a TIC. It's a three-unit. We're in the process of doing the TIC conversion to condo, and one of the requirements is that we provide proof of a valid permit. So we need to kind of retroactively get the permit for the deck. As you can see, the neighbors on both sides are more into their rear yards than we are. And so we took the 25% of the total lot area from a rear yard analysis standpoint, and we impede on that rear yard with the existing deck. I think it's 2 foot 3 inches. And so we're respectfully requesting that we are enabled to retain the deck as it is. We do have three families that use the deck daily, and it's considered of high value to all of the families. They're 1,200 square foot apartments that we live in, and they're 4-person families, except for the top floor, who's he's an emergency room physician. So his deck is critical for his area of respite when he comes home from work. And for us, it's important as a family amenity and a garden area. So we'd like to keep it if we can, and we love it very much.
Thank you. So, sorry if you stated this, but do you know what year the deck would have been constructed?
You know, I think it's within the last 20. We purchased the property about 9 years ago, and it was it's been there. The neighbors have don't remember it not being there, but we've all relatively recently, within the last 12 years, purchased our property.
And this was not the result of a complaint filed by a neighbor. Rather, it was going through the condominium conversion process for the building. And
that's right.
As you noted, it provides the usable open space for each of the units. And it's my understanding from staff that it's been reported that a firewall is not required for this. There's no additional firewall
requirement. We're in the process of also going through our 311 notification with the building department, which the notification for that ends, I think, October 10th.
Yeah.
And we have a site permit that's been pulled for this existing condition. But if we're asked to provide fire protection at the property line, we're going to see if we can pursue a sprinkler solution so that we can retain the natural light and air that exists.
Okay, because just to clarify, too, and I hope staff had explained this, that if a firewall is required within the required rear yard, then it would be another variance coming back for
that. We do understand that. Okay. We do understand that. And we're not interested in a firewall, especially on the first floor, because, as you can see, our neighbor, this is the west.
Yeah.
And so we already have challenging natural light access to our dining room.
Okay.
So we would be pursuing a sprinkler situation if we could do that.
Okay. Thank you.
Yeah.
So
thank
you. Any public comment on this item on 443 Broderick Street? Seeing no public comment, it would close the public hearing, be inclined to grant the requested variance, noting that it has existed in this condition for some time without any apparent adverse impact, and it does provide usable open space and access to the rear yard for each of the units. And we can move on to the next item.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Okay. Item number 10, case 2014.0642V at 1516 Masonic Avenue, seeking a rear yard variance. You have 5 minutes.
Thank you, and good morning, Mr. Sanchez. John Kevlin here with Ruben Junius and Rose, here on behalf of the project sponsors, Casey and Aiden O'Connell. The rear yard variance request today would allow for a modest two-story pop-out at the rear of the property that would essentially occupy the area of an existing deck that will be removed, and will also allow for the creation and expansion of two dormers at the existing fourth-floor attic. Now, the purpose of the project is to renovate the existing home to better accommodate the O'Connell's growing family. So let me show you a couple pictures to start. Here is the front of the property. We're right in the middle here. Moving to the back, this is the area we're talking about, and to get a little bit more focused. So right here is the deck, and here's the addition. Both will be being removed. This story pole right here will be the height of the pop-out. This was where a railing for a roof deck was originally proposed. We've now removed that from the proposal as part of an agreement with the north neighbor that we'll get to in a moment. And then, of course, we've got up here new dormer on the north side and the expanded dormer on the south side. So the net increase of the pop-out will be 180 square feet, and the of the dormers will be 58 square feet, so they're relatively modest. We think this is a pretty classic case for a variance. We've got a situation where the building was built over 100 years ago, just barely encroaching into the rear yard, which due to the current planning code and interpretation of the code places serious restrictions on the ability to work at the rear of the property. So the variance is required because we're trying to pursue a Section 136 12-foot pop-out at the rear, which is allowed with 5-foot setbacks on either side and no taller than two stories. There's a 1990 ZA interpretation that basically says if you're already encroaching within this rear yard and not fulfilling the 5-foot side setbacks and the two-story height limit, you in fact have to remove all of the obstructions before you can seek a pop-out, even if you're not going any farther than 12 feet past the rear yard line. So what we've got here is a rear of the building that is encroaching just 3 feet into the 45-foot rear yard, and so therefore being able to do this pop-out would require removing the rear 3 feet of the building. So the project meets and exceeds all of the required variance findings, exceptional and extraordinary circumstances, not applicable to similar properties. Due to that 3-foot encroachment into the rear yard, the building can't provide any pop-out that is otherwise provided in Section 136 without demolishing the rear 3 feet of the building. So that places a real restriction on what you can do at the rear. And in addition, the dormers cannot be extended all the way to the rear 3 feet of the building, even if the height limit is met. Want to point out a bird's eye view of the block. Here is the subject property. Subject property is only 100 feet deep, whereas the almost identical properties to the south all are 125 feet deep. So they allowed deeper building areas, even though it's essentially the same building. So the literal enforcement results in practical difficulty and unnecessary hardship. Again, this literal enforcement would require the O'Connells to remove the entire 3 feet of their existing building in order to get any sort of pop-out. So right now they can't come out into that pop-out area at all without that removal. And it also drops the height of the usable space in the attic for the rear 3 feet of the building. So again, impractical and really unnecessary considering the circumstances. And again, not attributable to the owner. It was constructed in 1900 by a previous owner. The variance is necessary for enjoyment of property right enjoyed by others in the same zoning district. The project proposes a depth at the same depth as the south neighbors, and those south neighbors can still provide a full 12-foot pop-out. So, you know, we're just getting to where they are today. And the north neighbor can also provide a pop-out. They happen to be within the 45, providing the full 45-foot rear yard, so they don't have any problem with providing a 12-foot pop-out should they choose to. And the same goes for the dormers for both adjacent properties. They have no problem doing that, so long as it meets the height limit. Not detrimental to the public welfare or injurious to nearby properties. In fact, the project's going to be quite beneficial both to the O'Connells and to the neighborhood. It actually reduces the depth of the current structure by removing the rear stair improvements, so there's actually going to be more open space provided in that rear yard. It's going to provide a full 5 feet of separation between both the north and south property owner, which are not provided right now. I think you've seen in the application are the general PAM policies that this fulfills. I just want to mention that Casey has worked with the adjacent neighbors. We've got come to an agreement with the north neighbor. We're not going to be providing, if I could just finish up, providing a deck on top of the pop-out. And in addition to that, we're going to be providing at least a 30-inch sill above the new north dormer. That's reflected in the plans right now. They feel more comfortable with conditions of approval. We're happy to accept those should you feel that's appropriate. And again, we've got support from the south neighbor as well. So we think this project improves the neighborhood, improves the property, classic variance situation, and we're here if you have any questions, Mr. Sanchez.
Thank you. So I see that you're removing, as you noted, the stairs, also appears that the breakfast nook at the second level, and the bulk of the project is really to add a family room at the main living level, accessible from the kitchen. Underneath that is a media room, and you know, one of the questions that came up is, you know, the existing building is, you know, fairly sizable for a single family, but you have in the attic, there's another media room, and is there any reason for the duplication of the spaces, or maybe some other justification for that?
Casey can jump in for a minute. I think the idea of the basement is more for like a second family room for the kids, and the attic is for the study. Yeah, but
definitely, the basement is completely unfinished right now, so the idea of that is for it to be more of a kids' hangout room, and then the top floor would be more of a home office and adult media area.
Okay, thank you. And okay, we'll see if there's any public comment on this.
Okay, thank you.
And we're on item number 10 for 1516 Masonic. Any public comment on this item? Seeing none, close the public hearing. At this point, I will take the matter under advisement. I think I'm generally inclined to grant the requested variance, but I do want to review the language that was proposed. I think I understand and agree with the reduction in the condition prohibiting a roof deck at the rear, but would want to take a bit closer look at the language regarding the height of the sill, and not something that we would typically condition in a case like this. It's within the buildable area, but you know, in terms of what's in the required rear yard, I certainly understand that. And we can move on to the next item. Thank you.
Okay, moving on to item number 11, case 2014.01022V at 208 Pennsylvania Street, seeking rear yard, open space, exposure, and dwelling unit mix variances.
So we do have, I think, five more cases or so, and we usually have to get out of this room by noon, and that's why we take those other cases under consent. Just would like to get a better idea about what cases people are here to speak on. There's two here which are at 208 Pennsylvania and 530-542 Brannan Streets, the same project sponsor with both of those cases. And I think I'm generally inclined to consolidate these two cases and have one public hearing on both of those. Are any of the speakers here for those items? And would there be any kind of opposition to consolidating those two together? You still would get 3 minutes to speak. Okay, so let's do that. Let's consolidate items number 11 and 12. And so project sponsor, you'd be given 5 minutes to present on both cases if you can, and then public comment will be the full 3 minutes, and you get a rebuttal as well.
Sure, thank you. Good morning. My name is Alan Murphy. I'm at Perkins Coie LLP, and I'm speaking today on behalf of the applicant, Essex Portfolio LP. Before discussing the details of this variance application, I just want to make clear its purpose. The variances under consideration today will provide a path for all existing residents of 208 Pennsylvania and 530, 542, and 548 Brannan Streets to stay in the Bennett Lofts properties. With approval of the variances, no residents will be displaced. Yet if the variances are denied, Essex will have no choice but to evict existing tenants to comply with current city permits for the property. We are fully aware of the acute housing shortage in San Francisco and are eager to work with the city to preserve residential units. As background, about a decade ago, a group of real estate developers unassociated with Essex built 208 Pennsylvania and the Brannan Street properties. After obtaining a certificate of occupancy, those developers then divided several of the approved units into smaller units without new permits and rented out those units without disclosing to the city or the residents that the new smaller units were not permitted. The units existed when Essex, my client, acquired 208 Pennsylvania. Today, Essex proposes variances that will allow for the reclassification of 4 units at Pennsylvania and also for 27 units at the Brannan Street properties as dwelling units. The current zoning for both of these properties allows dwelling units, and as a result, the variances will allow for units that have existed for years to conform to the existing mixed-use zoning on the properties. To be clear, the variance process will only allow for the preservation of what currently what originally was built on the properties. There will be no changes to how the units are used. There will be no changes to how the units are occupied. There is no new square footage that will be added to the units, and only minor interior work will be required on the units. Ultimately, if approved, there will be 22 live-work units and 4 dwelling units at 208 Pennsylvania. There will be 32 live-work and 10 dwelling units at 530 Brannan, 36 live-work and 9 dwelling units at 542 Brannan, and 34 live-work and 8 dwelling units at 548 Brannan Street. And as an outcome of this variance process, again, no tenants will be displaced from the Bennett Lofts properties. To allow for the establishment of the dwelling units, Essex is seeking 3 variances at 208 Pennsylvania Avenue. In the interest of time, I won't walk through each of these, but there's a rear yard variance required, variance required to authorize the payment of fees in lieu of open space, and also an exposure variance. And those are for 208 Pennsylvania. For the Brannan Street properties, a rear yard variance, another open space variance, an exposure variance, and a dwelling unit mix variance are required. With the establishment of these dwelling units in both sets of buildings, Essex will pay well more than $750,000 in fees to the city. And I think it's important to note that these units are subject to the Planning Code's affordable housing requirement, so the fees do include an inclusionary housing fee. In addition, Essex will pay the Eastern Neighborhoods Impact Fee, an open space fee, which again allows for an in-lieu fee to be paid. One of the variances allows for that, and also a schools fee. And as this suggests, essentially the required city process for establishing dwelling units is being followed here. There just are variances required to allow to conform what's in the units now with the zoning. To conclude, the goal of all these variances is simple, to avoid the displacement of tenants. Should the city grant the necessary variances and permits, all residents will be able to remain in Bennett Lofts. If the variances are not approved, however, some tenants will be forced to relocate so that all units conform to previously issued permits. We appreciate the opportunity to apply for approvals that will protect tenants from being displaced into an incredibly competitive housing market. As we've heard earlier today on another matter, there's widespread concern among the public about preserving housing in San Francisco, and Essex wants to be part of the solution to this issue. So I'm available now or later on for any questions you may have.
Thank you. So just maybe quickly to clarify, in my understanding, these properties at the time that the live works were constructed, they were within M1 and M2 zoning districts, which would have actually allowed housing at that time, but I believe would have been a conditional use authorization. As you noted, the properties in their current zoning, which was part of the Eastern Neighborhoods rezoning efforts, now allow the housing as of right. So it's more permissive to have the residential units, it appears.
Their residential units are permitted units today. That's correct.
Okay. Thank you. And we'll go to public comment, and maybe I'll ask if people will indulge me that we would have anyone who would want to speak in opposition speak first, and then any member who'd want to speak in support afterwards, just so I can have this clear moving forward, and so we can get through this item as quick as possible. Is there anyone who's speaking in opposition to this project?
It's not really opposition, but I just wanted to kind of reiterate the importance of not kicking the residents out. As far as I know, this issue was brought up about 2 years ago. The Essex Properties brought it up in a way saying that, oh, hey, we just found out about this non-compliance, and because of that, we need to kick you out. Three-story units were converted to two-story and studios, and you know, it's because we found out about this, we have to kick you out. Obviously, residents were quite disturbed about this. It didn't come to light that until later through town hall meetings that the city didn't even know about this. So I think it's disingenuous to try and play this off like, hey, we're trying to make sure housing is you know, fair and equitable. Even the way that they approached how residents had to leave, they said, oh, hey, you know, we're sorry that we need to kick you out, and here's, you know, you can call Essex and look to see if there's other properties available. And at first they said, here's $100 for having to kick you out. And then after residents were obviously pretty pissed about that, they raised that to $500, which is still kind of nothing, you know. So I think we've reached this point because the last remaining stragglers that have held on to the units, you know, a lot of people said, you know what, let me just move out and not have to deal with this. There's a kind of a group of people left that don't really have choices. And so even as far as I think like 6 months or a year ago, the issue seemed to be tabled, and then Essex kind of re-brought the point up. And I think what they were doing is legal in a sense. And so it was kind of the remaining residents that made noise to local newspapers and television, you know, to try and get the word out that, hey, there are families here that are getting kicked out. So I appreciate that Essex is trying to keep the remaining people in, but I'm because it's hard to wade through all these permittings and, you know, what the variances are actually being allowed for, I just want to kind of make sure that what the variances they are going for will not make it harder for residents to stay there. And I understand the need that, hey, if rent needs to increase, that's, you know, it's just the way things are. So, but
no, I think that's an important point. And you know, to clarify too, certainly the variants are necessary and
yeah,
to allow the residents to stay. And if the variances are denied, then the units would not be able to be legalized.
Okay.
And people would have to move. And certainly, you know, to also to share the, I think, the city's general sentiment in terms of
preserving and protecting existing housing, you know, legal or illegal. It never should have gotten to this point where someone profited from having illegal units for so many years and put the residents in jeopardy.
Yeah. Yeah.
That never should have happened. And now, you know, since there's a new owner,
and
who's trying to
I don't know.
That.
I mean, these are big deals. Someone should do their due diligence on are these units up to code? And if they didn't do that, and then to come later on and say, hey, this is totally new to us, we have to kick you out. From the very beginning, it was a little disingenuous, so I'm kind of skeptical in a sense. So hopefully things are moving in the direction of letting people stay.
This does allow people to stay. So yeah. We'll see if there's any other public comment, and they can, anyone in opposition or support can speak. And you know, we do have some limited time. You know, as I kind of share the sentiment of the city is to preserve existing housing, legal or otherwise, and so maybe, you know, when you can think about that when you're going through your comments. Thank you.
Hello, my name is Sarah Sherburn-Zimmer. I'm with the Housing Rights Committee. We've been working with the tenants in this building. We are one of the groups that have talked with the city about talked to Essex about legalizing these units and letting these tenants stay. We support the tenants moved in believing their units were legal under the old landlord, and we support any parts of the permits that keep the existing tenants in their units. From our understanding with Essex, three of the units need to be changed in substantial ways, combining sections of units or back together, as opposed to just legalizing the units, and those are on the Pennsylvania building. And we have an agreement with Essex that the tenants in all three of those units will be moved to similar units and at their same rent that they have now. And so that's an important part of it for us, is that all the tenants be able to stay in their units except for these three, which it seems like it's going to be difficult to make them legal with that, and those tenants will be able to be moved to a similar unit with an agreement that their rent will stay. And so we're very excited the city's looking at legalizing these units. We wish that previous owners weren't trying these sleazy tactics, but right now these are people's homes and we need to protect them. So thank you.
Thank you for your work.
Hello, I'm Jared Quisnier. I live in 208 Pennsylvania in Unit 105. I'm actually one of the tenants in a unit that will have to be displaced within Essex properties. So Unit 105 is a two-story loft, and there's 1105 below us that is the studio that we're going to have to be merged, because there's no way to make 1105 livable in itself. So what that will mean is that it will become a three-story loft, which will be much bigger, a totally different unit that we will not be able to afford. So what we'll need to do is we'll need to be displaced. There's other units as well that are in this situation within Essex properties. So I stand up here today to support this, somewhat begrudgingly, because we will have to move within the units. But I do support this with the context and with the confirmation from Ann Morrison and Justin Cho at Essex Property that we will be able to find a unit within 208 Pennsylvania of similar size and quality as at a similar rent, a leased rent. So that's the terms that we understand, and that's the situation that we're in. Thank you.
Hello, my name is John Stoa. I live at 208 Pennsylvania. I've lived there for over 11 years. Disabled. I live in Unit 109, which is not one of the units currently affected, but it is a non-conforming unit. And I just want to go on record that I've been told that I won't have to leave, that I won't be evicted, and that my rent will stay the same.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I'll be fast for you guys. excuse me. My name is Martin Edelman. I'm current tenant of Unit 412 in 530 Brandon Street, which is one of the affected units. My wife and I moved there nearly 4 years ago, and it was owned by the previous owner. We had no idea that it was not conforming to the standards. It is, in fact, the ideal place for us to live, and so we're very much in favor and support the approval of these variances so we can continue to live in our home and also add the much-needed dwelling units to the city. Thank you.
Thank you. Any other public comment?
Good morning. I think it's still morning.
Close.
Moguli Tabinio, Legislative Aid to Supervisor Millie Cohen. Through many of the discussions that Essex has had and they've had with your office and DBI and so on and so forth, it's been determined that this has been the best option and way to make these units legal, and with Essex agreeing to, you know, not displace anybody and move people within the buildings at a similar rent and similar quality unit. Supervisor Cohen just wants to also express her support for this project with those terms. Thank you.
Thank you, and thank you to you and the supervisor for your work on this. Thank you. Any other public comment on this item? Seeing no public comment on either of these items, 11 or 12 for 28 Pennsylvania and 530, 542, 548 Brandon Street, I close the public hearing, be inclined to grant the requested variance. Certainly while, as I stated previously, this is not a condition that ever should have existed in the first place. The illegal units never should have been created. They were done so by the previous property owner. I appreciate the efforts of the current property owner to work with the existing tenants, ensure that there is no displacement, and to come with the best possible solution for a difficult situation. And we can move on to the next item. Thank you.
Okay, moving on to item 13, case 2012.0907V at 74 Blake Street, seeking a rear yard and exposure variance. And you will have 5 minutes.
Okay, good morning. Currently at the rear of the site, there is an existing single-family home which was built prior to 1890. The proposal is to only reconstruct the home in its current location. In fact, we propose to reduce the height, depth, and size of the existing home while increasing the open space of the property. The proposed work conforms to current planning code section 181C2, in that the existing legal non-conforming building will be reconstructed within the existing building envelope. Literal enforcement would prevent the property from being rebuilt as it does not conform in its location to the current planning code. Literal interpretation would also result in a loss of a family-sized dwelling unit. The property has gone through a historic review, case number 2012-0907E, dated January 17, 2013. The result was that no historic resource was found to be present. Many of the properties similar to this have received variances for the rebuild of existing rear yard located single family homes that were legally built prior to the current planning codes going into effect. This proposal will not be detrimental to the public. It will result in a building that will be safer, meet all current safety and earthquake codes. It will also be safer to the current neighbors and future residents of the building. It will expand open space to meet the requirements of the planning code, which the current property does not meet. The granting of this variance will contribute positively to the objective of increasing housing supply for our city. Many neighbors have signed letters of support of the project and will allow my family to move into a new home. In addition, there was a property condition report done back in 2013. The findings were that the repair would be substantially more than 50% of the value. The property currently has no foundation. There's massive issues with decay. Planning department suggested the rebuild was the best course of action in the situation. If you look here, this is the existing home. And this is the existing location. This is in the back. The front building, there's no work proposed. So the back, we're actually going to be cutting this piece. If you look at the bottom, you'll see we're cutting a piece off to increase the distance between properties. We're not going further into the rear yard over there. It'll also be a shorter building. It's going to be a couple of feet shorter in height. And the overall square footage is smaller. But it'll create a very nice three-bedroom family-sized dwelling unit. So we urge your support, and we're here to answer any questions.
Thank you. So the building currently extends over the property line. Are both lots under one owner?
It's a different owner, but it's someone that
That's someone that we know. It's a friend of mine.
Okay, and then they'll be able to develop what is otherwise a vacant lot. Is that the
plan? Yeah. My friend is going to be developing a vacant lot there, and there was already a permit to remove the portion that extends over the property line.
Okay,
this was actually initially this building was likely located based on the historic report in my research on the corner of Geary and Blake.
Oh,
it was probably built in 1889. And it was moved in 1906 after it was damaged to this site. At some point, all the lots were owned by the same person, and they didn't, you know, they didn't know or care about property lines.
Wow.
At the time. So, and it had probably 7 or 8 different additions, none with any permits over the years as well. And you can see by the pictures the architecture or lack thereof. I think initially it was probably a 2-room cottage, and it was added onto.
Okay. Thank you. I appreciate that. And we'll see if there's any public comment for 74 Blake Street. Any public comment on this item? Seeing none, close the public hearing, be inclined to grant the requested variance, noting it's a rebuilding an existing legal non-complying structure and reducing its size and obstruction over the property line. Thank you. And we can move on to the next item.
Next up, item 14, case 2013.1801V at 1391 14th Avenue, seeking a rear yard variance. You have 5 minutes.
Hi, I'm going to try to be quick. We're seeking a variance for a storage shed in the back 25% of our property. First, I want to show the current situation with the house. We are this property right here. Which is a little bit set back from the neighbor to the north. And then the neighbor to the south is a 3-story unit. And this, both units are owned by them. And then there's another unit or another home behind us. So our yard basically is surrounded by buildings. And then due just to the nature of our family and that we work from home and we have very active kids. We need a shed to put some of the stuff, their stuff and the garden things and our office storage in the back. If we were to put it forward where it's allowed, it cuts all the light. It would be in the location that all our light is. So if you could see, the only light access we have basically comes in right about here. So this part of the yard gets some nice light, not that you can see it from this picture. and my daughter and husband are very active in like gardening, and we're very much into the greening of the city. But we really want to just may put this in the back so that it doesn't affect neighbors. I have another picture that shows you can see how we like to garden. That we've got this building in the back. This ladder right here is 11 feet tall. So just even this little light wall right here, the building wouldn't even come up to it. And then this building, like this ledge is over 13 feet above. So no one except for our neighbor to the direct north would even see it. And he is okay with it. And I have a signed letter from him. Yeah, we have it from actually all surrounding neighbors that would see the property. So based on the fact that we don't have adequate light in our yard and the fact that we have an active family and we need some storage space, we're requesting this variance.
And will that tree be removed at the rear?
The green, like, overgrown bush that's kind of dying, yes, that will be removed. The plum tree will not be removed.
Okay. All right. Thank you. We'll see if there's any public comment. And is there any public comment on this item? And we're on item number 14 for 1391 14th Avenue. Seeing no public comment, close the public hearing, be inclined to grant the requested variance, noting that this is a bit of a compromised location with buildings at essentially 3 sides of the rear yard, in particular one to the south, which already casts a large shadow on the rear yard. And so this is an alternate way of activating that rear yard space. So we can move on to the next and, I think, final item.
Yes, final item, number 15, case 2013.1269V at 129 DeSoto Street, seeking a side yard and rear yard variance. You have 5 minutes.
Hi, my name is Karina, and I'm the owner of the property. I bought this property about
you know, June of 2013, and we're working on it right now for my growing family. And I'm actually a neighbor of my new house. I live just a block away, and I would like to stay in this neighborhood, and I've been in Ingleside Terraces for about 10 years. So what I'm proposing here in my new house is a one-story garage structure on the southwest corner of my lot for a two-car tandem parking. The rear yard and side yard variance is sought because I think the zoning for this neighborhood is to have about, I think, 6 feet from the property line, and this structure would be within about 2 to 2 feet on the side and 1 feet from the back of the neighbor. I have a few supporting maps that showed how it was previously. There is no parking right now, no structure, but there is a concrete pad that my neighbors also confirmed that it used to be a one-car structure there. And they took it away, I think, as soon as they bought the property before to make a basketball court for their son or something. So this is how it is existing. And I supply you with a Sanborn map of the DeSoto Street block, which shows this little structure right here as well that was an existing, some kind of a one-story garage. And the pattern of Ingleside Terrace's neighborhood is, you do see a lot of these detached structures in the rear side of the lot. And this is a quick survey that my husband and I did by just walking around the neighborhood, as suggested by the planner, Tom Wang, to note just within our block how many car garages available in just this one block. This is where I actually live, and I have one myself. And I know my neighbor Bob next door has a side-by-side car garage. And this is an aerial map of what the map I just showed you guys. And the zero doesn't mean that it doesn't have a car garage. It means that usually it's underneath the house itself. Yes. It's just that you can't see it from the map. But for example, my neighbor to the left and the right, they both have I guess what do you call it, under the house car garages.
It's just, yeah, it's in the building.
Yeah, it's in the building and not detached. Correct. This is just quickly how the elevation is as proposed. I think that it's a very low impact on an already existing structure on either side. This is my neighbor to the left, I believe, and then they have a one-car garage right here. And there's how it looks like from, I think, the front of the house. You can't really see it because there's going to be a gate. And a quick detail on the two cars, and then a little area for my children's bicycles. In terms of, I think that people always talk about casting shadows for the new on a new structure, but here's what my backyard looks like. This is to the left, which is the 135 DeSoto, and then this is to the right. So I don't believe that the garage structure is going to add more darkness into my backyard or anyone else's, for that matter. Just show you some pictures of my neighbors with their carports on either side. And on a personal note, I think that it would be great to have a garage structure so that I can take my car off the streets. And I have 3 kids, and both my husband and I have to drive to work. So we have 2 cars. And then
just quickly, on a personal note, I live on Victoria Street, and there's lots of trees in our neighborhood, and having the car outdoors with no garage structures at all really corrodes a lot of the paint of my car. And also, single-side terraces is a fairly safe neighborhood, but on some of the streets, once a year, we do get egged on Halloween days, and then there's been an instance that all my cars were keyed on the street. So it would just be great to get them off the street, even if, you know, a covered structure would be great.
Thank you. So you currently reside on Victoria Street, but you'll be moving to this house? Is that the plan?
Yeah, I reside on 715 Victoria Street. We bought that house in 2004.
Okay.
And I love the neighborhood, and I need a bigger space for my growing family. And so another property, actually we know the person, and she lives just a block away on 129 DeSoto. And we've always really liked their house, and
okay.
I love the neighborhood, so I want to stay.
Okay, great. So you're going to move to this property once the work is complete, and the parking that exists currently on the parking pad would not be sufficient because of what reasons exactly?
I would like a car garage so that I can, you know,
being closed.
Yeah, protect the car. And then now that I have a van and my kids are sometimes sleeping in it, you know, right now I just go into the driveway and then I sit there in the driveway, you know, in my house. And the parking structure that I have right now houses one car. Mm-hmm. So, and then the van is always the one that we use a lot. And then we're just out there.
Okay.
Sitting with the kid until they wake up.
All right. Thank you for your comments. We'll see if there's any public comment on this item. And we're on item number 15 for 129 DeSoto Street. No public comment on this item. I think at this point I'll close the public hearing. I will be taking the matter under advisement. Well, I think last month we had another case on the same block. And so
correct, 160. I just actually was listening to the recording.
Yeah, and so I just wanted staff to do some more research on that. So take the matter under advisement so we can have staff do some more research into kind of the history of those other parking structures on the block. And if you have copies of the materials of the research that you did, if it's not already in the file, it'd be great to have copies of that.
I could give you the copy that I have.
Sure. I would want to make sure that you keep a copy, too.
I scanned one. Yeah, I have electronic copies.
Okay, thank you. So again, public hearing is closed. The matter is taken under advisement. Are you guys here for the last...
16, was it on consent?
It was on consent.
Thank you.
Oh, I'm so sorry, guys. Stayed the whole time. Hopefully it was...
Just wanted to make sure.
Oh. Yeah, I mean, next time you could have, you know, just...
Yeah, we got here at 10, so we must have missed the
okay.
First.
Yeah, so no, it was on consent. We just got busy. Take care. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks. that's the last item. I see no general public comment. This hearing is closed. We will reconvene on October 22nd, 2014. Thank you.